This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Writer Rumble. Take on your friends in a game of speed spelling madness or battle against enemies in single player mode. Pick it up today in the App Store.
T minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Right on. Happy post-Thanksgiving, beginning of the holiday season, weekend confirmed. Hallelujah!
I got my Christmas tree up. You got your Christmas tree up?
No.
Are you going to do one?
I was told probably not.
Dude, if you got
You were told probably not?
Yeah.
Why, because the cattle attack it?
Well, actually, that's what I said. No, because, so we're going to my mom's place for Christmas.
Your mom.
We're going to my mom's place for
that's
Christmas.
Your mom.
And the answer was, well, since we're going for Christmas, we don't need to have a Christmas tree. I'm like, well, you have to have a Christmas tree anyway. And then there was some Christmas tree back and forth. And then finally I was like, you know what? It's fine with two cats, especially with a new cat. Like, they're just going to break it anyway. They've already broken plenty of other stuff. So they break the tree. They'll pull the tree down. And then I'll just be stressed about it. It'll be one more thing to be, like, riled up about.
Wow, bah humbug over here.
I'm pissed. I love Christmas. You know, I'm a Christmas freak.
Yeah.
I'm a total Christmas. But we're going to have a Christmas party, I think.
Oh, fun.
We'll do a Christmas party. Anyway, that is Mr. Jeff Cannata here to my left.
How you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Very well.
Oh, you were asking the listeners how they're doing.
Appreciate the response.
And at the far end of the table is Indie Jeff Mattis.
How's it going? You know, unlike Jeff Cannata, I do not have my tree yet, but that's just because I don't like fire hazards. It's a long way to Christmas, man.
Oh, wow.
Well, no. I mean, I'm going to get one, but your tree's going to be brown and crusty by the time.
But I bought the special
plastic
protection
tree, oh.
formula that they sell at the Home Depot.
Did you really? You should have asked
me
first.
Is that a ripoff?
Just 7-Up and water is great.
Really?
Yeah, it's all you
trees
need.
Love 7-Up.
7-Up and water. 7-Up and water works fantastic.
Can I put a little fireball in there?
Did you make a fresh cut on the bottom
the
of it?
The tree will love it.
You forget that, like, back in the day, well, you probably remember this. When I was a kid, I used to work at nurseries, especially in the fall, because working nurseries in the fall when you do Christmas trees was awesome, especially because every time you lugged a Christmas tree to someone's car and roped it on for them, you'd always get a tip.
That's cool.
Which is not bad. I mean, it's not bad. You get like a couple of bucks, but a couple of bucks and you do like, you know, 50, 60 trees a night, you're in good shape, right?
My pro tip was we went to two different Christmas tree lots.
Yep.
And then we went to Home Depot.
Yep.
And Home Depot had same trees, half the price than a Christmas tree lots. Seriously.
So did you make a fresh cut? That's the thing. You make a fresh cut so it has a nice fresh cut so it's not all healed over. Mm-hmm. And then you make sure and keep it wet and do about 50-50, 7-Up in water, and you're golden. Still in a run out.
You learn something new every day.
I know. Amazing. Stupid stuff that I know. That's Mr. Jake Gasdall there.
First timer.
Yeah. Hello.
Welcome.
Jake and I have been friends for years. As a matter of fact, we were having a discussion about my former birthday exploit
that I will never
disaster.
Forget. I would label a disaster. As I recall, it was
a beautiful thing.
Fantastic.
The first time I met Jake was at a bar, and he started telling ghost stories and scared the living shit out of me.
Whoa, hold on. Really? You tell ghost stories?
Well, when I was living in Japan, a bunch of crazy shit happened, and that's kind of some of the stuff that started up, the skull stuff, and like was kind of inspired by a lot of
Are Japanese ghosts worse than American ghosts?
Way worse. Dude, haven't you seen those movies?
Yeah, so much worse.
Yeah,
I have a good ring story, too.
Sorry to piss all you listeners off, but we're going to diverge. We're going to talk about Skulls of the Shogun and strategy games and all that kind of stuff later. And Jake, back in the day, even before that, worked at Sega, but I kind of want a ghost story. Can I have a ghost story?
Sure. So
awesome.
So the reason, a little trivia fit here for the Skulls of the Shogun, one of the first characters I really wanted to design was the Fox Monk. So I was living in Japan, and it was the early 90s. I was in college over there, and I lived up in the mountains outside of Kobe, Japan, and it was in a dorm, and we had this bender party one night at our apartment, and I had a really bad hangover the next day. And it was like Saturday, and like the house was trashed, and it smelled like booze. And I just was like screaming headache. I had to get away from my roommates. They're arguing in their underwear, playing poker, and everyone was just making noise. I was like, I'm freaking out. I got to get out of here. So I took my book. It was Rising Sun. I remember, the Wesley Snipes movie. Mm-hmm. It was the novel of that. And I went up into the woods, and it was like, maybe 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I had a really bad headache. And I sat down. I found like this clearing that looked like maybe there had been a building there a long time ago, but it was all smashed down and gone. And I lied down against this tree, and I was reading my book. I was trying to read, but my headache was screaming, and I kind of just like fell asleep. I took a nap. So I woke up, and it was like dusk, and there was this giant white fox standing like right over me, like sniffing my face. And I freaked out. I mean, you know, he wasn't as big as like a wolf, but it was a big fox, and it was a fox, and I'm in the woods, and I'm sleeping, and I'm just like, you know, rude awakening. I freak out. I stand up, and he just kind of looks at me and kind of pads off. And I went back to my room, and the guys were like, the house was still trashed. I was like, fuck it. I just, like, I was sleepy. I'm going to go to sleep. And I took a nap, and crazy stuff started happening. Like, I just, you know, I started having these sessions where I couldn't move, and there was, like, someone in my room with me, and people were, like, tapping on my face, whispering in my ear. And I started talking to my Japanese friends about it. I was complaining about it. And everyone was like, oh, yeah, that's just Kanashi Buddy. That's a thing. Like, some ghost must have picked you up in the woods and... And, you know, just wants to communicate with you. And I'm just like, what? Like, what? 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 And they was like, yeah, it's just a thing, you know.
This is a thing?
And it's just a thing. And it just started happening. And it just never stopped happening for, like, a long time. And then, like, a year later, I moved back to Seattle. And I was at a party. And I heard this guy telling this story at this party. Like, a party that I didn't know. Like, it was a bunch of people I didn't know. And I heard this guy telling the same story. And I sit down. I was like, holy shit, man. Like... Same thing happened to me. And he's like, yeah, I was going to school. I was living in Japan. I was like, what? He's like, yeah, I was going to college. And I was living in the mountains outside of Kobe. I was like, me too, man. And it turns out we went to the same school. He was one term after me. He was living in the same dorm, same apartment, same bedroom.
Crazy. What?
Completely random. And as we're sitting there, I swear to God, I think this was just a coincidence, but the refrigerator started humming. Like, it was right behind me. We were, like, all spooked. You know how you get when you're telling lots of ghost stories? I got all spooked, and my beer can, like, slid at my hand, and then I, like, stood up, and then the refrigerator started humming, and I almost had a heart attack. Right there.
That's awesome, right? Rad!
That was pretty awesome.
I'm going to cancel Week and Confirm and just have Jake's ghost stories.
I got lots of them, man. I got more. I got too many. But that was actually one of the big inspirations for Skulls of the Shogun was this, you know, I would go hiking up there and see all this crazy stuff. You find these old temples, hidden moss-covered things up in the woods. You know, no one's been there for who knows how long. But that kind of spookiness kind of really inspired some of the otherworldly backdrop for Skulls of the Shogun.
Super cool.
That's awesome. I don't even know. I'm like, okay, we shut it down now. I don't even know how to follow that up.
This has been Weekend Confirmed.
So, ghost story. Just to cap it off. Years later, I was living in LA actually at the time, and I told the story to some other friends of mine, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna now with the internet, I can go take a look at what those white foxes look like. I want to like look at one and see if I can identify like what kind of fox it was or whatever. So I looked it up. There's no such thing. They don't really exist. They're just gods. They're just like. Fable thing. They're not real. They don't, you can't find them.
Yeah. That just happened.
I like how he even has like an extra little stinger. Yeah. Hold on.
Oh,
I want
by the
thing,
way, by the call was coming from inside the house.
Exactly. Wow. All right. That was kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Dude, we have other awesome stuff to talk about today. I don't know what it's going to be. Oh, Jeff Mattis has been playing Far Cry 3.
I'm so jealous.
I'm so fucking
exceedingly
have.
Jealous.
I can't wait for that game.
I was super going to make sure I play that game, but in the throes of getting our game final, I've been like super Writer Rumble guy.
Yeah.
And a lot of, and okay, so since we were talking about it right before the break, I won't leave you hanging anymore. Also, trying to finish Lost Odyssey, which is right. Unfortunately wound up Lost Odyssey, of course, the Xbox 360 exclusive Mistwalker
from 2009
8 2008 yes, it's running my first two saves
first Unreal Engine game for
yeah game. It was Unreal yeah. Engine. It is really nasty now. You're like, oh. My first saves were like February of 2008.
Wow.
And I went back because I got, you know, I got bogged down in disk one. But now I'm like, I'm at the very, 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 very end. But I'm in this part where now I have to go back. And before I can do the final assault, I have to go grind some more.
Fuck that shit. That's why I stopped playing those games. I love them up until that point. And I'm like, you know what?
Let's talk about that then, because I actually had this discussion with Ariel about it, because I was frustrated with this whole grinding thing too, because it literally has gotten to the point where now with Lost Odyssey, like over Thanksgiving weekend, I played on Thanksgiving and on Friday, but then we played a bunch of Borderlands too, which we'll talk about that too, because we did the DLC and we did it wrong, and I don't want anyone else to do it wrong, because I feel bad for us for being stupid dodo heads. Mm-hmm. But now I'm like playing Lost Odyssey where it's like, I'm just going to get on for an hour, and it's get on for an hour, run around in a circle track around this temple, get a couple of fights, level up, save,
fuck
and
that.
Then turn.
Fuck it.
Dude, that sounds like so much fun.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really not that fun.
Well, no, but you put in the time, right? So it's like now it's just a matter of pride.
So Ariel's argument with me now is that she's like, you should just stop playing. She's like, you got the enjoyment out of the game that you wanted to get. You haven't been having fun with the game for like the last 10, 15 hours you've been playing it. Why are you torturing yourself? And I'm like, well, because I have...
Because if there's one thing that Garnet Lee does, it's finish games.
That's right. God damn it. I'm going to slap it. God damn it, I sure fuck do.
If they're from 2008, they will be finished.
That's actually pretty impressive, man. I applaud your efforts.
But there's so much at the end of this game that really irritates me, and you know that I love Japanese role-playing games, and I was making the comparison to the Final Fantasies, which were also, you know, Gooch was part of those teams, but there were lots of other people who played in them. And look, they had stretches that had long, but I don't remember having to grind out like this to, like, get specific elemental resistances and capabilities to handle, like, death attacks. Because basically here at the end of the game, there are... Everything you face that is mini boss and above has a certain period of time into the fight at which it's going to throw a, if your party is not this powerful, I just wiped you out attack.
Yep.
You know, and that really is irksome.
It's not fun.
That's not combat design so much as it is advancement gatekeeping.
It's basically you must be this tall to ride this ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
And that's not fun. That wasn't fun when I was too short to ride that ride.
Right.
And it's not fun now.
Yeah. It is. And it is a little rough. And that's really frustrating because the accelerate, and it also really disrupts the acceleration of the storytelling of the game at the end, because the storytelling actually is the game story actually at the end is really kind of cool. It's because you have the culmination of the immortals and are they going to go back to their home world or are they going to stay here and how do they handle that? And you know, how do they handle the responsibility of all the actions that they've taken and the emotional weight of the bonds that they've had inside this world? Like there's some cool threads running throughout there, disrupted by, oh, I need to go grind 3 or 4 hours at the temple in order to get leveled up enough to come back for the next part of the boss fight.
Well, you bring up a point that I think I wanted to kind of even step back even one step further and talk about, because as you may know, I am unemployed now, and I have...
So you're playing Lost Odyssey.
Well, I'm not playing Lost Odyssey, but I was, you know, I decided, like, I don't have to play anything. I'm going to play stuff that I...
You're not playing World of Warcraft, are you?
I might be. That's a good idea. I should really do that.
Oh, shit.
Don't go down that road.
Rewind.
But no, I literally was like, this is my chance to go back and finish all the games this year that I really had fun with, but I had to move on from because of commitments.
Yeah.
And I you know, put in Assassin's Creed 3, and I was like, maybe I'll finish that up. And I played it for about 15 minutes. I was like, you know what? This isn't... I'm not having fun right now. I want to continue. I love this world. I love the story. It's really interesting. I want to see how it ends, but I'm not having fun. And I was like, I want to be committed in this moment to put in a game that I will have fun with. And so what I ended up going back to was Darksiders 2. I was like, I never finished this. I loved the first one. I really want to finish this game. And I put it in, and I played it for about 4 more hours this week. And I'm going to finish it. I was like, this is one of those games I think that people overlooked too quickly, because it's got some flaws. It has some rough edges. The camera is a little wonky at certain points. There's, you know, things that I don't love about it. You can get lost. The level design isn't as intuitive as it should be. But God damn it, if it isn't super fun. And I love that Zelda formula, and the graphics are great,
it's
and the
so
combat
beautiful.
System's fun.
It's
yeah.
so beautiful.
Yeah.
I just, like, the art direction is stunning. Joe Madureira, yeah. I was a big fan of his comic book.
Me too.
And just to see those worlds in 3D, I'm just like, oh my God, this texture work is gorgeous. Lighting, everything.
But it wasn't us that didn't like it. If you think about it, everybody in the enthusiast community was pretty hardcore behind Darksiders 2.
Mm-hmm.
It was definitely well supported by us. It's like somehow... It just didn't click.
Well, didn't it come out the same week as something else big? I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But yes, it did.
It was something else big.
Well, and the first Darksiders kind of suffered from that same problem in terms of finding that audience, and the people that really liked it, and the people that didn't sometimes didn't even discover it. It wasn't because they tried it and didn't like it. It was just like they didn't know it existed.
Yeah, I mean, I think what happened was that Darksiders 1 came out and was really successful with the gaming enthusiast crowd. People loved it. They're like, oh, look how fun the game mechanic is. Look how well it, like, takes Zelda and, like, moves it into a different world.
But
and then someone said, oh, well, you know what? If we're that successful with a new IP for a first run, we come back with a sequel, we blow it up some, we make it bigger and badder, we market it better, and we hit the jackpot.
Well, I think the first one had an identity problem, because I think a lot of people, especially with the game's first hour or two, I think a lot of people thought it was God of War, that and not Zelda, And that the Zelda-ness of it in the first game didn't really come out until you got about 4 or 5 hours in.
Well, and the combat is strong, but it's not God of War strong. Like, so,
it's not,
so,
but it's not about
so,
that.
So if that's what, yeah, exactly. So if you're playing the first few hours and that's what you hang your hat on in terms of this is what the game's going to give me, you may be missing out on, you know, quite a bit of, I mean, the puzzle stuff is great, but, you know, flaws and all. So
relative to Assassin's Creed 3, what was it about Darksiders 2 that when you put it in was fun?
I think the combat system is really it's really fun. As Jake said, the art design is it's a world I enjoy being in. I enjoy being in the Assassin's Creed world too, but and this is just my temperament, I think. But I don't like the feeling of being stressed out all the time when I want to have a relaxing, fun game. And Assassin's Creed stresses me out. It stresses me out that I'm going to be discovered, that I'm going to, you know, that all the guards are going to be alerted and I'm going to have to deal with that. And I can't just go and do my objectives like I want to. And I don't know. It's just my particular feeling.
Temperament.
Yeah. It's when I'm playing and when I just want to relax and have fun, I enjoy Assassin's Creed 3 a lot, but it's not a stress-free kind of enjoyment.
See, this is the problem. This is, I think, the thing that also drives Ariel nuts about me playing Lost Odyssey, is because, especially at this point, the stakes are you could wipe on any number of encounters, and as it is with its spacing of saves, unless you're grinding right next to the save orb, you could be like out 3 or 4 battles and just lost, you know, like an hour and a half. And I'm to the point where I want to finish so bad that every time I get a battle, I want to bank it. It's like I want to run back and bang the button and bank that shit. I don't want to have any risk of it like going away, because I just want to get like that foundation moving up so I can go take on the final boss.
Yeah.
And that's straight right. It's stressful. And that's like part of it right off the bat. That's not that much fun.
That's why I had to quit playing Dark Souls, man. As awesome as it was, I just, every time I would lose a bunch of stuff, I was like, I don't have much time to play games. I can't just throw away an hour or two here because of this. And it just stressed me out too much. I quit playing. I wanted to play it. I mean, it was amazing.
People love the stressful part of Dark Souls, though. I mean, that's kind of
the people that aren't like directing a game and have two kids and have like these mere minutes of game playing time every day at the end of the day. Like,
No. That's not a game you want to sit down and go, oh, I'm going to relax.
Casually,
I don't know. Get my way through this.
I think for some people, just acknowledging different temperaments, that the tension and the stakes, the high stakes, like the high stakes brinksmanship of it, is what makes it really.
I would argue that is what is the rush. I mean, people love
rush.
It. People get into that, and I totally respect that. And I'm almost jealous. Like, it reminds me of like old school 8-bit games.
Oh, it's
it was
totally
like
old
so
school.
Brutal. Mm-hmm. You had to just own it to, you know, do that. And like, games don't do that. I mean, everyone says it's just true. People games hold your hands these days way too much. You know, and that kind of just like, here you go. Good luck in there. You know, that's kind of missing.
It's the same thing. We were talking about this before the show. It's the same thing I encountered with Zombie U. It's like, I admire that game. I love the structures, the systems that they've set up for that game. I admire it from afar. And when I start playing it, I'm like, oh man, this game is awesome. I want to play through it. And then I get stressed out and it's dark and I can only use my flashlight and I just don't like how it feels and I just want to turn it off and play
Mario. What was that tweet you
made? I'll take Mario.
What was the tweet? You made a tweet this week and I was like, I wanted to talk about that during the show. It was something like, I'm so stressed. This game's making me so stressed out or so wound up. And then you didn't follow it up with that. You just were like, this game's making me so wound up and so stressed out. I'm like, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? And I guess it's a bad thing.
For me, there are times when I love the tension in games, and there are other stretches of my life where I go to gaming for fun and, and escape, I guess, escapism. And I think it just has to live in different times. And I think more and more, as Jake said, when I'm working hard or doing something during the day and I turn on video games, not for work, I want to do it just to even Need for Speed, which is a very thrilling, fun escape, can play it in small chunks thing, I put in and I lost a couple of races and I was like, I don't want this feeling right now. What I want is fun, stress-free exploration, having a good time in a world, and that's what Darksiders provided.
So here's the counter-argument that always comes up with that. It's like, okay,
you're a pussy? That's usually the counter-argument I get.
You are a
try
pussy.
Sucking less? Right. I get that one, too.
You should try sucking less. No, the thing is that it's the whole, like, if there's no black, how do you have white? So it's like,
I get that.
If there's no risk of failure, how do you get the enjoyment out of the successes? And I think that that's fine for a binary game design. If you go back to those old school games, the reward was a binary reward. It was, you succeeded, you accomplished level 3-2, or you failed, you did not get to the end of level 3-2, and you will restart at the beginning of 3-2 next time.
Yeah.
that's not necessarily applicable as game designs have broadened beyond go from point A to point B. Because if you're not just going from point A to point B, then there's a lot of other things you can do. So again, another game that you love, take Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
Skyrim has a core quest path, right, that you can go through. And yes, there are battles that you will win, and you need to win to advance the story. So there are those sort of like mile markers along your journey. But when you're not within that, you can go in and do whatever you want to do, which is why I think that's, if I'm not putting words in your mouth, that's one of the reasons you love that game.
Absolutely.
Because it can feed that to you, right?
Right.
And at the same time, you don't have to get caught in a position of, oh, if I fail this battle today, then the time that I just spent playing the game has been for naught.
Right.
And the thing that I can't detach, and this is where Ariel gets on me, is that like she can play a game and lose those battles and be ready to go again the next day and not have felt like she lost something. Whereas if I sit down and play and don't get like the advancement tick mark, I need the gold star. If I don't get the gold star, then it's like, damn it, I wasted that fucking time.
Mm-hmm.
And we all have a threshold for like how much we'll run at that. Like usually I'll
for sure.
Yeah, like I'll go half a dozen times. If I'm really into the game, I'll give it more than normal. But yeah, there are definitely those walls of enjoyment where you're just like, okay, this is work now, or this is you know, me running at a brick wall.
That's what killed me about Darksiders 2, man. I was so much having fun with it, and I got stuck, and I tried and tried and tried to figure it out, and it wasn't a big thing. It wasn't an easy thing. You could just look on a FAQ or something. It was some subtle thing that I missed, and so I quit playing it for a while, and then later I was like, I love that game. I want to go back to it, and I tried again, and I still couldn't figure it out, and it's just some dumb thing, like one switch somewhere that I'm not hitting in order, and whatever it is, and I'm just pissed now because I want to finish that game, but I'm like, I want to just, like, you know, push out and hit a, you know, button that says just scoot me 10 minutes forward and let me just, you know, jump back into this.
The Ghost Mario.
And that game has a what's the next step button, and that shoots a little bird down the alley. It's supposed to show you where
terrible
it is. And it's one of the worst implementations of that I've ever seen.
Would have been better without it, because
yeah,
half the time it's telling me to go the wrong way. Like, right. I'm like, wait, no, I just came from there.
Yeah,
you're telling me to go in and out the same door. I'm pretty sure that's not going to get me anywhere.
Yeah,
like, yeah,
it's a tricky crow. It's a very tricksy crow.
He's a little prick.
He's a little prick. That's the same thing ultimately that winds up with me in Lost Odyssey. Like, there was a point, right, after I went back and said, okay, I'm going to play this game, that I was then invested far enough that at that point I was like, okay, now I'm so deep into this that no matter what the hell this thing puts in front of me, I am going to conquer this bitch.
Right.
And that's the part that I'm at now. And it's really frustrating. It really sucks. Because I really, a lot of things that I would like to be playing otherwise. Like, actually, I want to play through the end. And Aaron's like, why don't you just watch the end on YouTube? Just watch the end on YouTube. You'll get the, he's like, you've gotten the end out of it. It's fine. You deserve it. So I'm like, but then
but the
I won't have done
points.
It. I won't have done it. I don't care about the achievement points, really.
No.
Nah. Achievement points have never, that's a weird thing though, is achievement points for me have never been a victory. It's sort of like just things. I don't know.
Yeah, I've never, I mean, you can look at mine, they're not very high. I never finish games anymore, so that's probably why, but I've never been like,
there's plenty motivated. Of people for whom they're big.
Yeah. Well, I was reading an article in the newest game, or most recent Game Informer, I guess, maybe there's one after that, but about the guys that are shooting for the first million gamer score.
Oh, wow.
And there's like a race, like these like five dudes are all
can
trying
imagine?
To get it. Yeah.
A million gamer score.
Yeah,
there's those basements are probably full of activity.
That's a that's a lot of playing King Kong for 1,000 gamer points.
And their girlfriends are going for a million other dudes they've slept with.
Oh,
that was a cheap shot. Not even very funny. Wasn't worth it.
These guys are gonna be some of your best customers though, right? Gamefly and just like getting these things
probably
just going crazy. Like, just
I would guess. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I ever thought about that? They probably rent a shit ton. Who knows what they? I mean, Shu was the worst back at EGM, man. He was so into escalating his gamer score for a long time.
Dude, there are fucking blogs out there that are like, oh, get these, rent these games,
because
these are like the easiest ass achievement points.
Shu totally did that.
They're not fun at all, but like, here's a way to grind out some extra gamer score. It's like,
yeah. You would like go home,
who are these people?
You'd be playing something for review, and you'd see like Shu's online, he's like playing Cars. You're like,
you're totally doing it wrong.
Like, dude, what are you doing? He's like, oh man, I read how you get 1,000 gamer score out of this thing in one night. I'm like, okay, rock on, dude. Metal. Nice.
Whatever tickles your pleasure centers.
Yeah. Who are we to?
Darksiders is on that, is also another one of those games. So, you know, it's funny because we're going to talk about this THQ bundle thing. They have a shit ton of good games.
They really do.
For a publisher who's in such deep, dark waters right now, they have a ton of good games. Darksiders, along with Saints Row the Third, are all sitting there on my list of like a stack of, you know, like, I want to play these games.
Did that Warhammer game come out this year or last year?
This year.
That's another game that was totally overlooked. It was really
and
fun.
And apparently it was awesome. Well, I mean, I really liked the demo. Really
it was fun. Yeah, I heard Space Marine.
A couple of people played through it and they were like, this game is
It's super
awesome.
Fun. Yeah.
It's like, it's the equivalent of a modern version of the Outfit. Remember the Outfit that came out right when the 360 came out?
Which,
and I'm not saying that the Outfit was as good as Space Marine. Space Marine, obviously, much later in the cycle, so it's that more refinement to it. But the Outfit was way overlooked at that time. It wasn't great, and it was good.
And if you guys are, Darksiders fan, as a Darksiders fan, that should be right up your alley. It's not exactly the same, but there's a very similar feel, like weighty combat, weighty melee, and you know, you got some range.
But I think when I go to play, I'm going to play Darksiders 1.
Darksiders 1's great.
Because Darksiders 1 is if I understand correctly, more focused and more tightly path-oriented along like a Zelda progression, whereas 2 is a little more open-worldish.
Yeah, and it throws in the loot element, and it's a little less that template of Zelda, but it's still excellent. I was surprised how different from 1 they went, but...
So 1 or 2, which one would you recommend?
I think 1's a better game.
Okay.
Having not finished 2 yet, but... I'm enjoying the hell out of 2. I really am. I think if I had to do a top 10 list of my games this year, it would be on it.
And did you play Saints Row the Third?
I did.
Did you?
I had a good time with it.
Was that a game that tickled your fancy? Because we're talking about all these games that are silly fun, and sometimes like
the best times I had with that game were when Zav and I played it together online and just dicked around.
The co-op is great, but the real joy for me of playing that mission or those games is as you go through the mission progression, it's like. You literally have no idea what kind of crazy bullshit they're going to throw at you.
Yeah.
Like,
you have to pet a tiger in your car. There's a part where you have to literally keep petting a tiger so it doesn't scratch you and make you crash.
There's like a zombie outbreak in the city mid-game, like vehicles. Like it's just
you wake up naked in a sex slave shop.
Oh, yeah.
And you have there's a chase scene.
That sounds amazing.
Where there's a like what's the opposite of dominatrix? The dominated guy. I don't know. A slave. Sex slave who has like naked, who is pulling your little like rickshaw.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a chase scene with all these like
two rickshaws,
sex slaves being. Yeah. It's crazy town.
Speaking of crazy fun, I can't stop watching the GTA 5 trailer. I just watch it over and over.
Oh, right.
I want to play it so bad. It just looks so stupid fun.
It does look pretty intense, doesn't it?
Just the dirt bikes and like, you know, the go-karts and the flying in the airplanes and you know, helicopters and like the city looks so amazing. I'm like, I'm just going to.
Yeah, if I could put
it. Is that what you're excited about? Are you looking forward to their brand of storytelling and mission structure, or do you just want to be in that world and play around?
I totally have a huge respect for their stories and stuff and their missions and stuff, but I always prefer the just walking around. Like, I remember playing GTA 4 where you could zoom in the camera real tight behind him and just walk down a bad neighborhood, you know, at night and just like...
Yeah, see the different weather systems and lighting systems, and you're like, this is a world.
It's a world, and that's... Yeah. It sounds like... I've been reading a lot about the new one, and it sounds like they're just going deep on this world creation where people, like... belong in certain places and they go to work and they do stuff and like you can just get lost in this.
Yeah. I'm really tempted to go back to 4.
I never finished it.
No, if you go back to 4, you're better served playing the 2 expansions.
That's what everybody
which
says.
which are
really good.
Which are far superior in their own right. They're also shorter, so you don't feel like 4, the story in 4 feels like a slog after about
20 hours.
Because you get through it, and what they start doing, as in other GTA games, is characters come in, and you stay with them for a bit, and then they leave, and then you're with a new character that you may not click with as much. So it's a little uneven that way. Whereas you know the stories in the 2 expansions.
I never played Gay Tony, but I really liked Lost in the Damned, and I think that what you see happening. In those 2 expansions with as far as sort of focus and pacing, I think, although you're going to disagree with me big time, but I think you see the next maturation of that in Red Dead.
You're wrong.
I know you hate the pacing of Red Dead. I didn't. But and I'm hoping 5 is yet another step forward there because...
Wouldn't be surprised.
Because
if I
think
I have to go to
GTA
Mexico
games,
in 5, I'm going to blow my brains out.
Well, GTA games, I didn't have that happen in Red Dead for me, but GTA games always, there's always this valley of interest that I fall into and I'm like, here we go, answering my cell phone. You know, I really hope that that 5 isn't that because I didn't find that with Red Dead. I found Red Dead to be... I mean, there were moments, but far fewer of them than in the GTA games for me.
All right.
See, what I think Red Dead did better, which made it a better game, was the ambient activities they, I mean, they still had bullshit like, you know, the five finger filet and all that crap. Yeah. But they had enough stuff that wasn't just, you know, bunny hopping from mission point to mission point. Right. That was actually
entertaining. It was unexpected, right? It was like, you know, it felt organic and real because you're going to this place and all of a sudden this stuff is going down in front of you and you're like, wow, do I commit to this? Do I help her out? Like,
well, right. and the collectibles were even better, like the gold, the treasure hunting and the, you know, they just give you a map with some visual clues on it and you're like trying to figure out where it is.
Those were really cool.
You know, I mean, I liked a lot of the ancillary activities, the optional stuff, the hunting and the, you know, the marksman quests and the, you know, all that stuff that you didn't even have to do. But, you know, I'd go in there and just F around for like 2 hours hunting and stuff.
We'll take a little ancillary activity, do a little break. We can come back and continue this discussion about open worlds and Red Dead and Grand Thefts and Vice City is still the best, without a doubt.
There's no hills in Vice City, man. Drove me crazy. There's no hills.
Yeah.
It was all flat.
Is that how it is in Miami?
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure it is. But the problem was there was nothing to – just it was all the same. Like, I couldn't tell where I was and I don't know.
All right, stick around. We'll be right back.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Writer Rumble. Choose from 6 literary legends and use your board to find the most damaging words and watch as your enemies take a beating. Unleash special powers to increase damage, get new letters, or save yourself from dying. It has Game Center and Facebook integration to set up matches and compare scores with your friends. Check out Gamefly.com/WriterRumble for more information about the game. And download Rider Rumble today for only 99 cents in the App Store.
And no lie, Jake's microphone exploded.
Yeah, the fucking ghost came in.
Right after a white fox ran across the table.
Spooky. Right.
And I have a screaming headache now.
It sounds like, we're making it up, but we're fucking not.
No, it did explode. That was weird.
And then Micah comes in and goes, guys, that's never happened before. We're like, yeah, well, yeah, now we're all going to get anally raped by some ghost.
Wait!
Awesome.
Speak for yourself.
Wait, why am I laughing at that?
Yeah.
I should be terrified.
Oh, my God.
Sorry.
So why, by the way, were you thinking that the pacing of Red Dead would be the model, and what part of it would be the model?
I don't mean the model. I just mean I feel like they're maturing with each release, and the problems that I had with the various GTA games where it just felt, as Jeff said, much more eloquently than I am right now, it just feels so scattered at a certain point where it's like, oh, I've got like 3 people calling me on my cell phone. There's a chick that wants to go out on a date. Like, what do I even do?
And I got
to
drive halfway across the map.
Yeah.
Or find a cab or whatever.
Right. And with Red Dead, you could like instantly go to the next place. Could skip over that stuff. It just felt a little bit,
I found myself using the fast travel even less in Red Dead because of the dynamism of like the,
it was fun. Yeah,
the world design. So you'd be like riding, right. There's, you know, you pass those events, those little roadside events enough times and you start to identify them right away, but there's still plenty of stuff to like, oh, that looks interesting. I wonder what's over there kind of thing. And
did you play AC3?
I am probably about halfway through, but I put it on hold because the 3D TV's coming.
Oh, so. Yeah. I think you're going to like
the 3D. And because he played Far Cry 3.
Oh, we should probably talk about that because I'm super jealous.
I keep checking my watch. I'm like, is it fucking December 4th yet? No. It's not. No. I'm pissed.
Yeah. I played it. I never do this. Right after I finished, I was like, okay, time for a full completionist run of, like, once I wrote my review, I was like, okay, time to go through.
You started all over again?
Yeah.
No shit.
That's so cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's because You can't, the way that they have fast travel stuff that you can unlock and set up so that you can sort of leapfrog your way through the story missions, which are really good. But it also, it's, you know, I was telling Jeff before, there's a quote in the PR of like, it's Skyrim with guns, right? Which is like really trite and kind of lame, but
guys, it's Skyrim with guns.
But it's like totally Skyrim.
Guys, it's Skyrim with guns.
But,
oh yeah!
But what they mean by that, I think, or what they were getting at, is that it has that same sort of Skyrim-y quality where you'll do a mission and you'll be like, okay, now I'm going to get in this Jeep that I found on the side of the road and go to this next mission. And while you're driving by, you're like, oh, there's an encampment next to me that's not on my map, or there is I'm going up the side of the hill. There's a hang glider, or oh, you know, here's a. You know, an animal that I need to kill to skin for so I can make a new holster so I can carry more guns.
Oh, so rad.
Or like, it's so just excited. There's all these gameplay systems that just sort of really wrap the package up. So it's, without spoiling anything, it's ostensibly a revenge story, like on its surface. But what they do with The character development, either both.
Isn't he from Santa Monica?
What's that?
Isn't he from Santa Monica in the story?
He,
I believe he is.
He, yeah, it totally makes sense. Because
so give the setup. So before you tell the background, give a more hardcore, like, what's the setup of her Far Cry 3?
The premise. Okay, so I think it's half a dozen friends, all trust fund kids, three brothers included, all go on this trip. I think they're in Shanghai, and you find a lot. There's some stuff that's revealed through the story, but the bottom line is they go on an extreme vacation on this island that somebody tips them off to. Hey, it's totally deserted. It's a tropical paradise. Go there. And the game opens up and you are basically tied up in a bamboo cage with your brother looking across from him. And the main bad guy that you've seen in all the trailers, Voss, is monologuing at you, giving you this really well-acted, creepy, like, I'm going to fuck you guys up and you guys are totally dead now and I'm going to sell your, you know, friends to into human traffic or into slavery. And it's really intense. And then, you know, the very, very first time you are actually controlling the character other than looking around is escaping from this camp. And, you know, shortly, I'm trying not to ruin anything, but basically you've got the bad guys, the human traffickers, and then on the other side, you've got these island natives, the Rakyat, who are basically, you know, the good guys, ostensibly the story. You very early on get a tattoo on your arm, which sort of indicates your skills. So you get a tattoo and there's like three skill trees. And as you progress through missions and kill stuff and whatever, you get XP and unlock skill points. And as you add skills, like I want to run faster or I'm going to be able to move faster while crouching or hold my breath longer or do a takedown from below a guy if I'm underwater and he's above me or whatever. There's all these different moves you unlock and it adds to the art on your tattoo.
I'm just going
to
say that sounds better than a tattoo on your boob.
Yeah.
Trespasser says, hey.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
Remember that shit?
Yeah.
So there's no new ideas. They're just recycling them, dude.
So the character progression is really good because you've got the standard skill stuff, which is like, you know, there's stealth skills and, you know, heavy skills. And so there's like three trees. And if you basically are a completionist and go through the whole game, you'll eventually unlock everything. It's not like you have to really choose. They kind of made it sound like you had to go, you want to go stealth or you want to go heavy, but you really.
How much do they embrace this idea of not having an artificial HUD? Because obviously if you're going for tattoos on the arm, mm-hmm. then you're kind of in that dead space world of like, you know, instead of a health bar, we're going to put, you know, glowing lights on the back of your suit.
But you don't, now, that doesn't come into gameplay, does it?
What's that?
It doesn't come into gameplay, like the tattoo, does it?
No, but when you level up, right, you go into the menu and you level up, and the first thing he does is like he sticks out his arm and he like kind of looks at it and you can see the tattoo kind of ink in. Like it,
so that's what I'm saying. How far into that minimal HUD are they? When you're playing the game, does it still have like a normal like Halo HUD in there?
Here's the thing. There are the sort of mission reminders and the things like go here and do this or this is what you can do next and the mini map and stuff. On PC, I didn't really have a big problem with it because I could sort of adjust the field of view to be really big on a widescreen monitor and tweak it so that – but I've seen some screens of there's a little bit of interface clutter, especially when it comes to the messaging that it gives you early on particularly. But also, you know, you get a new mission and you go off and do a side quest instead. You complete the side quest. You get the bubble pop up and sometimes you'll have a couple of different, you know, help things that pop up on you anyway. So the HUD sort of does intrude a little bit, but what you're talking about, the full body awareness sort of feel is awesome. It's like when you're running, you'll see your arms like swing into camera a little bit, or when you're sliding, your legs will kind of, you know, you can do a running slide and your legs will go out in front of you. Or
did you see like the Kotaku dude was like freaking out on how cool climbing was in the game? He's like, climbing looks amazing in this game.
Okay, so there are one of the big game points is there are these radio towers that function a lot like the viewpoints in Assassin's Creed. So you scale these things, which get progressively more and more rickety and crazy, and they're not really technically platforming challenges, but they are like, you know, you are jumping and climbing and like trying not to fall off these things, and they can kill you. And it'll do stuff like you'll jump to a ledge that's like do a little running jump to a ledge and he'll grab it and then you'll see his legs swing up into camera like he's trying to, you know, like he just barely got it and he's trying to get himself up. If you jump off a cliff and you sort of fall and have a hard fall, you see him put his hands down on the ground and the camera kind of dips down real quick and then he gets up. So it very, very much feels like And the other Far Cry games did this pretty well, too.
Crysis did that, too.
Oculus Rift, man. That's what yeah. I
want to
do.
I mean, the other games did that, too. Where, like, when you're in the vehicles and stuff, like, it's all first person. Yeah. And you get in there and, like, you know, tchotchkes are swaying from the rearview mirror. And, you know, it's all very detailed and stuff. It looks really, really cool. Well, what was I going to say? Oh, about progression, though. The story progression is really interesting, too, because you are a trust fund kid. And while they don't 100% nail it throughout the course of the game, you do start out as a like a 25-year-old would be almost in real life in that situation where he's totally freaked out. Like his brother, you can tell, has a little bit of like, you know, maybe was in Iraq or served in the military or something. So he's got a little bit of a harder edge to him. But the main character is like seeing guys get killed for the first time. He's like, oh, my God, what are you doing? And then it slowly – he meets the natives, and he comes into his own.
So basically, they've done New Tomb Raider before Tomb Raider could do it.
Nope.
Well,
yeah, in many ways, yeah.
I mean, it sounds like, you know, innocent kid out stuck on an island has, you know, forced into the survival situation. But
to be fair, that was the plot of Far Cry 1.
Yeah, dude on the boat swimming.
Yeah, it's like a vacationing guy.
Does this one have monkeys with rocket launcher arms?
No, but it does have monkeys.
The GameSpot. Exclusive DLC something.
Yeah right?
Pack. It has like Monkey Dude something.
Monkeys with bombs on them. Yeah.
There's like a monkey.
Monkey see, monkey dude.
Oh, no, it's GameStop like, exclusive version. Yeah.
That's GameStop exclusive. F that.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if you can't tell. I mean, my review went up last week, but this is definitely contender for Game of the Year.
Wow.
It totally surprised me. I expected to be a good, like, I liked previous Far Cries and stuff.
I think Far Cry 2 is phenomenal. I had so much fun with that game.
There's a couple things that drove me nuts other than
respawning enemies.
Respawning enemies, the guns jamming was not fun. It was not like a thing that I enjoyed, you know. Yeah.
Both of those are fixed. So
the gun jamming totally and realistic. Lack of fix your gun.
And sure. The lack of like you were in the Africa. Like I wanted to be jumped by lions and like alligators or crocodiles, whatever, and like that was just kind of missing. Like the place was awesome but empty.
There are 40 over 40, and I don't think I've encountered them all even in my entire playthrough. 40 species of animal in the game. So and these are animals that like will I mean you'll see online there's a bunch of stories already of people
crazy for awesome example stories. Setting tigers on fire, sending
like,
them to camp.
Yeah, like I'm approaching a camp and there's a bunch of guys and I'm like scoping them out with my camera and stuff and I'm getting ready to it's fairly early in the game. I'm getting ready to go kind of stealthy and start stabbing dudes and try to take out the camp because you get more XP that way if nobody sees you and sets off the alarm. I'm getting ready and I hear one of the soldiers go, "Oh shit, Komodo dragon guys." And
what?
And this Komodo dragon is chasing a herd of goats out of the jungle, like next to me. And so I watch as the Komodo dragon comes up, chases the goats. The goats are running away. And then the Komodo dragon sees the guys and beelines for them. And they're getting into this huge like scuffle. So I waited until, you know, Komodo dragon had some lunch. And then I went in and cleaned up the rest so of the
rad, dude.
It's, wait until they had lunch.
Yeah.
But yeah, the underwater stuff is like. Underwater stuff in this is a weird phobia of mine, but it like generally terrifies me in games, and this is sort of no exception. Like
there are sharks and stuff.
There are sharks. I mean, and it's a real real interesting indicator. Like for example, the best of anything that you can craft is always like some fucking big ass shark or like a bear or a special thing you have to kill.
How much does crafting figure into it? You've said that a couple times now. Like, is this like
now if you break it down too much, it is sort of contrived. It's a gameplay thing, but it feels really good when you're playing it. So you start out with the ability, for example, to carry one gun, right? Okay. You get your first gun, you buy it or whatever. And one of the first tutorial missions is, you know, go out to this area. There's some wild boar that hang out here. Like you can look at your map and tell where animals graze, different types of animals. And they're like, kill two boar, gather a bunch of these herbs and stuff because you can make stim packs and healing packs and hunting stuff so you can see, you know, animals through the brush and or repel them or whatever. I just totally derailed my train of thought. So
getting crafting to where you could make stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So you go and he's like, go kill two boar. And you go kill two boar and you skin them. And then it's like you go into your crafting menu and you make a holster with two slots now. So now you can carry two guns. And you want to carry more money, you can make a wallet out of pig skin. So you kill a couple of pigs and you make a wallet. You can make a beefier wallet out of something harder to kill. And
cows. Beefy. Nah, I'm sorry.
Beefy, yeah. So it's there is this progression of killing different stuff that gets progressively harder to hunt and kill to get better gear. And then, of course, you know, once you clear out a town, for example, like, so in Far Cry 2, the respawning enemy stuff is solved now by you clear out these enemy encampments and the surrounding area is now friendly. And so,
okay,
you know, so you don't have to worry about, like, if you're like, oh man, I just keep getting ambushed, go hit a couple of encampments, take those down, and you'll have a much sort of smoother transition through the map. It also feels more like you're making progress. So, like you're oh my God, I'm clearing this out. I'm getting this. This area's mine now, or the rock yachts now. So it's
so excited for this.
So I had a, I'm not going to go too deep into this, but I was in Thailand and a bunch of crazy shit went down and I ended up on an island on the far side in the middle of nowhere. We got stuck on this raft with a bunch of like local pirates. I thought they were going to kill us.
Yada, yada, yada on a raft with pirates.
I thought they were going to kill us. Everyone was like, my girlfriend was crying. My wife now, she was like crying, thinking that we were going to get like killed or sold into slavery or whatever. Like a bunch of crazy shit went down. It turns out it was fine. Like they weren't going to kill us.
Did you level up your skills by getting tattooed?
No, but I mean, again, I almost had a heart attack and died. And it was definitely one of those things that I'll never forget. So anyways, I have this personal experience with pirates in Thailand on the, you know, island in the middle of nowhere. I'm so excited to like relive that with a gun in Far Cry 3. Like I'm dying to play this game.
Wow.
And yeah, I can't say enough positive about it. It does have, I mean, like with any huge, massive open world game, there are, it's not perfect. I mean, nothing is, right? But definitely up there in terms of best open world experiences. And
a lot of shooting games out this fall. How would you rank just
also the nudity in this one too? Like,
yes,
there is. Girl. I wonder if that, is that in the Xbox version? It can't be, right?
Sure can.
Sure. Ratings are ratings. Sure. You can put either one.
Is there nudity in Xbox games?
Yeah.
I mean, not often. But.
Well, what about Dark...
What about Boobs 2?
The fucking the game. What is it? Dark... The Tentacles game. What the hell is that
The
called?
Tentacles?
Oh, Darkness?
Darkness. I'm like, dark.
Darkness 2?
Darkness had boobs, I believe, didn't it?
I had kissing. I don't remember that.
You're just an old romantic. I was looking at the boobs. You're like, no, she likes me.
A little kissy-kissy first.
Oh, that there's psychotropic stuff in the game, too. Like that's really cool. Not? No subject psychotropic stuff? No.
That didn't play into my Thai adventure with pirates in any way either.
Well, I didn't mean to imply that. I'm just saying.
I don't understand what person's experience they were mapping that on, but not mine.
So, like I was going to say,
yes.
Lots of shooting games out this fall.
Yep.
Where would you peg, just for people who are into it from the shooter standpoint, where would you peg the weapon handling and the feel of the shooter and that kind of stuff?
Up there with the best of them. Like,
yeah?
Like literally, like at least as good as Call of Duty stuff. Like at least as good. Like there are similar problems. Like you're wielding a LMG and it's not going to give you the kick that an LMG should give you. But it does feel very solid. I mean, you know, you'll spot little cracks in the AI. You know, because it's such a big world and there's so many possibilities and it's so dynamic. But most of the time it works, and when it works, it's freaking awesome.
Did you multiplayer any?
I'm gonna do that once it hits, because I've been playing on PC and the review servers have been pretty ghost towny.
And you know, of course, you already know that the community is up in arms because there's no vehicles in multiplayer. And that's a huge omission for Far Cry, which is a really, I mean, and it's arguably a good point. It's a big omission. Far Cry has always been about having, you know, vehicles.
No
vehicles at all.
That's a strange decision.
Because they're trying to compete, as everybody, just like Battlefield did, they're trying to compete with Call of Duty.
Now, they do have the map editor, though. Which I've seen and dorked around with a little bit. And
but you don't need vehicles in it, apparently.
Not in the map editor? Yeah, somebody was talking about like putting a manta ray down and like one of the
you need to,
like
you
on
need
a
to
dirt
see.
Track and like riding it around the fucking map. Like I haven't seen that, but I mean you can apparently do some
psychotropic.
Like you know, three bears versus five tigers, you know, go.
You can do
like,
all that stuff.
Like, yeah.
But let me put it this way, the community has brought back the Fuhrer in the bunker meme.
Really?
Yeah. They are not happy about it. Because it's not Far Cry multiplayer, or it's Far Cry multiplayer without one of the things that made Far Cry multiplayer.
Well, I will say, like, I have no reservations recommending this to any, having not really gotten too deep into the multiplayer yet, I have no reservations recommending this to anybody who's looking for a great single player shooter. It's probably the beefiest. It's got a ton of content for people who are looking for it. I mean, the main story's probably, I don't know, you could probably get through it in like 20 hours, 15, 20 hours.
That's awesome.
Some of it's like, you know, some of it's because you have to travel and you're like, okay, here's my new objective, but I really should clear out this radio tower so I can see the roads and all the stuff around here. So there's a little ancillary stuff you do, even if you're just trying to beeline. But
I think that's the the earliest I've ever pre-bought a game in my life was Far Cry 3. The moment it was available on Steam, I was like, maybe somehow it'll get here to me faster magically. I don't know.
And, I'm really curious to see how it winds up being accounted for in 2012 synopsis, you know, like the
game of the year.
It's a good question, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like, well, we kind of jokingly have mentioned the VGAs, which get a lot of television exposure, but I think that people are probably more interested in, like, you know, who's Giant Bomb going to rank as their best game, who's Kotaku and Joystick and IGN. But it does sort of play into, like, when is it become a deal where you have to be out between, like, August and October to really be a heavy hitter for those things?
Wow, all those November games.
Are people going to remember Mass Effect 3 well? I mean, how well is Mass Effect 3 going to do in the 2012 reconciliation?
But should that be something that the industry sort of bends to, or should the industry go, fuck you, your awards show after everything's out for the year?
I'm saying the award methodology we approach is kind of fucked up. And even for other sites, like the reality is, the dirty secret is that a lot of the motivation comes from, well, there's not much going on between Christmas and New Year's. Let's run a story about the best games of 2012. When really the right way to do it would be to, like, let 2012 end and then go through all of them, right? Yeah. And have like a real solid consideration. And
that's how the board game community does it. Game of the Year awards come out in August for the previous year.
That's a long time.
But I'm thinking more like January.
I was thinking like January, February, right?
Saying, you know.
So the Dice Tower does it.
But the principle's great. I mean, like, you want to evaluate all your contenders, right? I mean, it's only fair. I don't know.
Just saying.
Why till August? That seems like
a really long time. A lot longer to kind of get and play all the games. They're much more difficult to get. But I also think that in contrast to the movie community, I really don't think Game of the Year awards result in sales.
Maybe not.
Best Picture nominees all get a bump in exposure and in viewership.
Yeah.
And I don't think that the nominees for Game of the Year get a bump necessarily.
I think it depends on how many games the audience buys. Like if you're a person that buys, you know, a handful of games a year, a lot less, maybe not a regular gamer, but, you know, somebody that games occasionally you're not going to buy and try everything.
Which authority do you go to? Because there's no authoritative set of awards for games.
No. You got to find voices that you trust and just kind of make your own.
Yeah, so but I also sort of, I don't think that what I don't think publishers see. Let's say Mass Effect 3 did get all the Game of the Year awards. I don't think you would see a big bump in sales for Mass Effect 3. Whereas a movie that came out months before would get re-released into theaters. People would all get excited about going to see it because it was nominated for an Academy Award. It doesn't really have that same, I think.
Well,
I think the movie stuff's much more established too, though, right?
You got
these old longstanding traditions and these voices where game stuff is kind of like, you know, there's all kinds of stuff going on.
Yeah, and Transformers is not going to get, you know, nominated for an Academy Award. You know what I mean? Like, so the big blockbuster stuff, it's not really a...
Right.
Whereas in video games, the big blockbuster stuff does get nominated.
Right. Well, not the only ones, but then the other thing is, I was thinking about this the other day, is I'd like to really have a real sit down and think about how could you do awards for games that really work as opposed to awards for games that try to mirror movies? Because, look, all movies are pretty much the same format. It might be an hour and a half rom-com or a 3-hour mega epic, but there's like that's about it, right? Mm. Whereas you're looking at games now that range everywhere from really cool artistic creative digital creations that are, you know, 6 to 8 hour experiences to Skyrim. And like to have those two in the same in the same awards contest is absurd. It's just ridiculous.
I think that if I, you know, when I come to start thinking about best games of 2012, it's hard for me to say any game experience was better than Journey.
But I can't agree more.
But how can you say that sitting down and playing a game for 2 hours and having a complete experience is comparable in any way to Assassin's Creed 3, for example?
Well, I think you just have to say it. I think in the current way it is, you have to say, hey, you know what? For me, the best experience this year was Journey, and that's my fucking game of the year.
Right.
But I think it's wrong. I think the wrongheadedness of it is just the whole way it's set up. And then you think about it. Even if you go to, say, for instance, the Academy Awards, there's Best Picture of the Year, but then there's a lot of other representative pieces that just don't translate well. Like, how do you do best actor and best supporting actor? You know, like the VGAs have tried to pull out these character pieces from games, but it just doesn't really seem to click as much, right? Because it's not really virtual acting. It's not virtual acting yet, except for the few rare occasions, you know, except for the occasions of like the Mass Effects and the
Uncharted
and the Uncharteds, right? But then, like, that's such a small pool from which you're trying to glean, you know, a valuable, meaningful award from. I don't know. There's got to be some way to do it right and to recognize the awesome stuff that's created by the artistic creators, you know, each year, year in and year out, without having it be like weird, silly things where, exactly like you're saying, where you've got, you know, Journey and Assassin's Creed and Halo 4 in the same pot. And you're like, what the hell?
You know, this sounds really cynical.
You could throw Angry Birds in there and make it really ridiculous, right? It's like they're all games.
Haven't they?
They're all video games.
Yeah.
It's going to sound really cynical, but what if you – I wonder what a Game of the Year list would look like if you broke down the categories by, you know, price. This, I mean, it sounds really, really – gives me the kind of the heebie-jeebies, but you're like, best $60 game, best, you know
– $15 game.
$30 game. Yeah, best $15 to $20 game. And so it automatically – I mean, yeah, it does – it adds a little bit of parity with, you know – it's an experience like Journey that was, you know, $15 or whatever, and compared to other $15 experiences that I had this year.
Well, the thing is, you're like, going to start looking at similar budgets, right? I mean, the $15 games are going to tend to be kind of the sub-$1 million, you know, or right, that area versus the $50 million blockbusters, which is, you know, 4 years and a 100-man team.
Right.
So at least to kind of start, you know.
A little bit.
Yeah. How do you feel about that, Jake? I mean, obviously your game is a downloadable game, and you've put.
And I obviously think it's the game of the year.
Obviously,
clearly,
I think it's going to be clear when it's released. but I mean,
17-bit and 13.
But no, I don't think that just by mere virtue of the fact that it is released on, you know, digitally or as a downloadable title, that it should be somehow ghettoized or seen as being less than. I think these experiences can be just as captivating and exciting. Yeah, I mean, obviously you feel that way too.
Yeah, in case the point, Journey was, I mean, there were less than 20 people. I think it was like 13, 15 people, something like that.
Right.
And it was a breakthrough, you know, amazing experience.
At all. Yeah. Do you think that those games in an award environment should be on par with one another?
Well, I'll tell you, if you say an adventure thing and you say, you know, Skulls the Shogun versus Uncharted 3, like, yeah, it's a different kind of experience. Like, you're not going to get the fidelity and the breakthrough graphics rendering stuff that you've never seen before. Like, it's a different experience. That being said, did I have an awesome time with the smaller game? Like, was it super engaging and I totally clicked with it and I couldn't stop playing, couldn't stop thinking about it? You know, it is a different experience. And I don't know where I'm going
with that. It's almost like you have to break it down like the movies do, like best sound design, best, you know.
Yeah, but then that really gets mechanistic.
It kind of does.
Right.
Yeah. It's tough to gauge, right? I mean,
yeah, and it is.
You got to cut it up somehow, but where does that cut
it's
go?
It's all relative. But yeah, I mean, that's the problem, right? There, nobody has a flawless system that basically makes sure that the little guys and the big guys are getting the right spotlight. Like, you know what I mean? The fair sort of same, I don't know, not
well, we've got about 2 weeks before we sit down to do the back-to-back shows, one of which will be our Weekend Confirmed look back at 2012 shows. So you guys out there listening, tell us what you would like us to do. Tell us how you'd like us to slice these things up, because, you know, the games we loved and we want to go back and, you know, relive some of those great memories. We just want to relive them in a way that makes sense and isn't, you know, matching up things that are just like, why are you comparing those two things together? That makes no sense, Batman.
I'll tell you what, I think this year in my head has more viable contenders for Game of the Year than the last three or 4 years, for sure.
It's an open field.
Yeah.
Open field.
Huge contenders.
All right, folks, we're halfway through, and when we come back on the other side, we have lots more to talk about. I think we'll hit the THQ and Humble Bundle thing next, since that's we kind of promised that, got into it, and then got sidetracked. So stick around. We'll be right back. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. If you come around here, I'll make them all day. I get one down in a second if you wait. I fly like paper, get high like planes. If you catch me at the border, I got visas in my name. Hopefully we are going to be able to escape. If you're wondering why that's on, Jeff was telling us that that's the opening tune that's on while you're there in the cave in Far Cry 3.
Yeah, little cage, yeah. It's
just like, so you know, I was arguing for making pancakes, making pancakes. Take some bacon and put
that. Yeah, you lost that argument.
No, nobody wants
that. Not surprisingly.
I do like making pancakes, though. Mm-hmm. Fair.
Making pancakes.
So since Jake's here as a indie developer, I thought it'd be interesting to get your take on the hubbub today over, today being Thursday, yesterday for you listening on Friday, over the Humble Bundle and THQ partnership or deal together. So here's the deal. Humble Bundle has done 6 or 7 excellent indie bundles. Their deal is fantastic. They get a bunch together of cool indie games, DRM free, available on Linux, and they put them up for sale on the site. You pay more, you pay whatever you want to pay, and if you pay more than the average price everyone's paying, there's always a extra bonus game that you'll get out of that deal. Beyond that, what's really cool is they have sliders at the bottom that let you set how much goes to the developers, how much goes to charity, because they always support charity, and how much goes as a tip to the folks who run Humble Bundle. So flash forward to now, and they are doing a THQ bundle. The THQ bundle consists of some, it's a phenomenal collection of games. It's all of the Company of Heroes stuff. So it's Company of Heroes plus the 2 standalone expansions, Opposing Fronts and Tales of Valor. It's Red Faction's Armageddon, Metro 2033, Darksiders, and Saints Row the Third, which is the bonus if you pay over the average, which was a whole $5.41 yesterday. And people are pissed. Mm. So here's the hubbub. Like, obviously, a lot of people are happy about this, but both Kyle Orland and Ben Kuchera have taken to their respective blogs to call out Humble Bundle for forsaking its values and partnering with the devil. And like, Orland goes,
"You know what this sounds like, though? I mean, I just interject real quick. This is like back when I was in high school and I was, you know, listening to the Smashing Pumpkins when they were first new, and then they got popular, and it's like, fuck those guys, man! What a bunch of sellouts! Yeah. They're all fucking popular now. Like, so what?" It's a great deal for people. Sorry. That's my 2 cents.
I don't disagree. I mean, Orleans went so far as to say he railed actually, against the whole thing.
I heard if you get seven, if you put in $7, you actually get Siamese Dream as well.
The last good album that they made.
Yeah. Nice. He declared that that Humble Bundle risks irreparably harming the brand and stepping away from what made the bundle successful. And then Ben said something about how Humble Bundle should be something special, whatever the fuck special means. Like getting all these awesome games for a ridiculously fantastic price and being able to set, by the way, you can set the sliders at the bottom of this thing to give all of whatever you pay to charity. Those charities are Child's Play and the American Red Cross. So,
exactly.
So you could pick up awesome games for next to nothing, have all the money go to American Red Cross and Child's Play, and that's the devil.
Well, I think, I think it comes from that motivation of this is that indie scene thing, and the man is coming in and co-opting our indie scene thing.
I just don't see any overlap there, though. I just don't see how that's a problem.
You're not bothered at all?
No, I mean, like, you know, I was taken out of left field. I was like, whoa, what the hell? Like, what? Like,
why are people getting upset?
Well, no, just when I first heard about it, I was like, wait, the Humble Bundle, THQ Bundle, like, what the fuck is going on here? But, you know, we were thinking about it earlier. I was just like, oh, there's no overlap. They're not hurting any indie games. They're not hurting anybody. Like,
there's no downside.
I don't see a downside.
The only thing that to me would be a downside would be, like, if they were to say, we did this bundle rather than doing a bundle with this game. In that case, I'd be like, well, that's bullshit, because obviously Humble Bundle was a spot where you could go get these indies put together so that they could co-opt their resources and be successful together. But there's no indication that this precluded them doing something or anything else in the future. Like, there's nothing that says, oh, they're never going to go back to doing it. Like, this is it. They're now going to be Steam sales. All Humble Bundle is going to be as a Steam sale. It's
a little weird. Like, what is going to happen next? Are they going to do an EA pack? Are these other
they
things?
Can do whatever they want
to? Because of THQ's in so much trouble right now? Are they kind of like trying to hope?
And here's the thing. I mean, if THQ does, I mean, THQ is doing this bundle thing. Like, if it becomes a mainstream thing, you can bet your ass that somebody else is going to make the Humbler bundle that's like all indie stuff again. Like,
even more humble.
Jake, I think from the business side, I think that this is a one-time thing. I think it's a THQ in, I mean, we all know THQ's in dire, dire, dire straits. You know, they've had to basically tell investors, look, our credit facility is okay, but then they have like all kinds of weird negotiations going with the bank. I think these games are on Steam and they have the ability to do pricing as they want to on Steam. They could run their own bundle sale on Steam. And it's nice that they're saying that this is for charity. I think that the reality here is that they're desperate for cash. I think that they're in a position. I think this is purely speculative.
This isn't how you get cash. I mean, sure, I guess you do get some.
So let's think about it.
I'm sure there's much. I hope there's a lot going to charity. I assume that there is.
I'm sure there's a ton going to charity. But even if there's only some of those sliders left for them where THQ gets some money, they probably need cash really bad. And they're probably out there trying to figure out how to do it. If you're selling games through Steam, I would imagine that Steam has a sort of deal where it's like, well, at the end of the month, we'll figure out how much you sold. And then we'll pay you however much we owe you within the next 30 to 45 days. And then maybe 45 days later, they get a check. So they're thinking like, so let's say that they need cash by the end of this year. They're not going to get it from a Steam sale, most likely. I don't know the terms and conditions of Steam sales, but I would imagine it's something like that. Well, I'm going to guess that's quite likely the way Humble Bundle is set up, considering that you pay through PayPal, which is pretty much instantaneous, that they make it work out a deal with Humble Bundle of whatever we make today, can you put that in our bank account today?
Cynical.
No, dude, it's not cynical. I mean, you have to understand, THQ is way past life support. They are at the point of absolute desperation.
Like fire sale.
So you're saying instead of calling it the Humble Bundle, they should have called it the Hobo Bindle.
Maybe.
It's purely speculative, but because of the way it's set up and because of the way a lot of indies do business, look, if you're an indie developer, same thing. You want to get hand-to-mouth fed, right? So Humble Bundle's probably set up so that they can clear their deck, if not daily, at least weekly. And have
how long do those go? Like 10 days or something?
Usually only
like
a few days, right? Like 10 days. So same sort of thing.
Do you think somebody sat in a room and went, how can we get money fastest?
Yeah.
Let's give our games out for as little as people want to pay us.
Well, to your point, Jeff, I think they probably could have figured out a way to put this either. I mean, I don't know, maybe there's some stuff to the Steam stuff, but you could have sold all this bundle for, say, $30 flat rate. Yeah. Boom. You get all these games that are like, you know, even if you hit the next Steam sale, it's probably going to cost you $45-$50. Here you go. $30 flat fee.
But if they don't already have a virtual storefront set up someplace and the ability to transact all that business, they needed someone to transact business for them. And they, I mean, I'm just speculating. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it was completely altruistic and they just wanted to support charity and put together this great bundle because they knew they were going to go out of business. And they're like, well, hell, as long as we're going out of business, we'll support charity.
Well, it doesn't even have to be either of those two extremes. It can be someplace in the middle. And any of those motivations, the ending result is a positive thing. It's a positive thing for consumers. It's a positive thing for the charities. It's a positive thing, it seems, for THQ. Like, how is this not a positive thing any way you slice it, even if they had the most cynical motivation?
So the not a positive thing is that one of the values that people were most ardent about defending about Humble Bundle was no DRM.
Oh, and it has DRM?
Well, it's Steam sales.
Ah.
So you get Steam keys.
Well.
And you've gotten Steam keys before with the Humble Bundle games, which you've always had the opportunity to also download the source code, right?
Yeah.
And in this case, it's all Steam keys. They're not giving you unlocked code.
So, all those poor people that are going to turn down all those great games for $5-ish because they don't want DRM, I mean, I don't know.
It's taking a stand.
There's a single tear sliding down my cheek right now.
It's taking a stand over your principle.
I get, and I respect that. But, like,
making a stink about it is one thing. Taking a stand over your principle is just saying, okay, you know what? I'm not going to buy there.
And
I'm not
going
to do that because you didn't honor that. But it doesn't, it really turns me off that like people got so riled up that they're like, oh, this is going to ruin Humble Bundle. Well, why? There should be many future great Humble Bundles to come. Anyone who's making an indie game right now should
the only concern is that it's been this kind of solitary voice for this independent community getting lots of, exposure and awareness of
course, it's been indie Royale,
So, this is sort of from that viewpoint, it's sort of cluttering the water there, right? It's muddy in the water.
I agree.
It's sort of like, it's becoming more ambiguous of what that thing stands for. I mean, I was totally surprised when I heard about it, but again,
it does change, what they've done, but it doesn't preclude them from still being a great place for indies to get together and do their thing. And like I said, I can't see anybody. Like, do you see Ubisoft doing something like this? Or no, I mean, they've got their own store. EA has the Origin store. Like, they all have their own outlets to do this. I don't know. Maybe THQ has a store, but I guess do they have an online store? Does anyone know? Does THQ have a digital store?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I really think that.
That's maybe telling.
Yeah.
Well, I really think that given their position and situation that they could have been desperate enough to generate really, really near-term cash that they're like, we got to do something.
But you say that like it's a negative. I the end result is this.
A negative for who? I'm not saying it like it's a negative. I'm saying it's morally, it's a business emergency.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that would be unfortunate.
Well, THQ's in business emergency land.
Yeah. They are in unfortunate land right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I really want them to stay in business because I want to see Company of Heroes 2. I really want to see that game finished. Like, look, we just got our first gameplay trailer of it, and it looks... Someone's like, it looks like Company of Heroes. I'm like, fuck yeah, awesome!
That Warhammer MMO that they were making, the 40K MMO they were making, got canceled, right? Or did it get changed into a, like a non-MMO game?
I think it mutated, but I could not
did it get canceled,
swear
canceled?
To it. Yeah. Yeah.
I was excited for that.
The MMO?
Yeah, it looked awesome.
Oh,
I used to play a lot of Warhammer 40,000 growing up. In fact, that really fed into
tabletop?
Skulls of the Shogun, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because it's gridless. You know, it's just a smaller thing of units. My best friend lived across the street, and his dad like gave up pool. Like, he was having a hard time. He was playing too much pool. So he gave it up at the same time that he got his kid this giant train set. So we had like mountains and rocks and castles and stuff. And so we just turned the whole pool table into this like the most amazing Warhammer 40,000, you know, playground ever.
That's pretty rad.
And so I played the shit out of that stuff. I used to paint, I used to win competitions. I used to paint those guys all the time when I was a kid.
Oh, dude, you had patience as a kid. Holy shit.
Yeah, I got really into that stuff. I was really into it. And so that really fed into sort of Skulls again. It was like Advanced Wars plus some of that stuff, kind of like.
No wonder you never got this damn game finished. You just keep going back and fiddling with it.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fiddling. I mean, we got four versions of it coming, so there's been a lot of technical fiddling, too.
You have four versions coming. So Skulls of the Shogun is the game that Jake's 17-bit studio is working on. By the way, they have the most awesome logo maybe ever.
I brought shirts for you guys.
It's awesome!
Kind of, it's kind it of really is a awesome. Cool logo. It's a really cool logo. But they've been working on... I saw Skulls of the Shogun first like at 8-4's office like 3 TGSs ago?
Probably. It's been a while.
You had it on like a laptop. I mean, obviously at that time it was a rough prototype.
Yeah.
But you had the idea down. And at that time, it was very much a sort of riff on Advance Wars, which is a cool game to talk about as well. Because we were actually talking about this during the break, is like Advance Wars is one of the few games that cracked the audience of and went outside of just the strategy audience world. It's like people played Advance Wars, and it was like they got into it. It was cool. It was really successful.
I think that had to do with platform, too. Like,
yeah.
Like penetrating. Well, because, I mean, that audience, right? So, yeah. So you're, I mean, what was the first one's handheld, right?
It's always DS.
Yeah, it's always DS, been, always been
DS. In this country.
Yeah,
I mean, well, it was GBA and then DS. There was two on GBA, then there was two on DS.
Wow, was that GBA?
Yeah.
Wow.
September 11th, 2001.
God.
Or September 10th, maybe. I don't forget. But it launched in the States, and then it was supposed to launch in Japan like a day or two later. And because it was war-themed, September 11th, it didn't come out in Japan for like 6 months or a year or something after that. They like just pushed it out.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I'd totally forgotten that.
I used to play that game so much when I was working at Sega in Tokyo. I would like I had my little blue clamshell, and I would go to the bathroom.
The clamshell was tight.
Taking a deuce, playing this thing, and like an hour later, my legs are numb. I'm like, I've got to go back to work. One more round, one more. Okay, let me just see if I can take that bridge.
They're like, are you okay in there?
Just one more bridge. I just got to take this bridge.
Oh,
I'm
God,
right
he's
you.
Shitting a bridge in there.
Dropping bombs.
Kind of the greatest game ever.
It is. It is. I never think of it as one of my favorite games of all time, but it really deserves to be in that list. It is a phenomenal game.
And
so it was super successful at taking strategy outside of that envelope, and that's really, really hard to do.
It was just accessible. It was accessible. It was cute. It wasn't like super dry, you know, serious war theming. I mean, you look at strategy games, you got like... Orcs versus elves. You got the Lord of the Rings thing. You got sort of modern military. You got future military,
right.
Or you have like historic military. But like everything's very grim and very serious and very you know, war games and lots of lots of everything. And so that game took the core essence of these battle tactics and sort of like holding this position and defending this.
Yeah.
But made it this poppy, bright, happy, colorful, fun little place to go in, and like there was no, you didn't feel bad for the guys when you killed them. It just felt good. Like,
and it's super accessible just from a pure rule set perspective. Mm-hmm. So many strategy games overwhelm you with tactics and minutiae. And that is there, but it's rolled out over a length of time that really ramps you into that at in a great way. So you don't feel overwhelmed at first. You don't feel like, oh, I don't even know what. There's right, too many options. There's too many units.
Sub-options sub options.
Yeah.
And, but I think it was always really good at giving you a like euphoric sense of like a cool resolution, too. Because even though it had just like those animated resolutions, like when you saw your rocket launcher roll up and it was like,
get some,
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's like that combination, because that works exactly in tandem with what you were talking about as far as like bringing you into it through the tactics part, right?
Yeah.
But I think that's like something that we considered when we were talking about XCOM, because XCOM, I think, had the potential, but it's too sci-fi-y, too techy, do you think, to not to break the envelope? Because it does everything else. Like
I hope not.
It communicates to you really well. It like lets you know what's going on. It handles like the ramping up of the technology and the tactics and all those sorts of things really well.
Talk about game of the year contenders. That one is high up for me.
Really?
Oh yeah.
A lot of people really like it. I didn't get into it as much as I hoped I would. I don't know what it was.
That's interesting. The art for
just
you.
For me, I'm a very visually driven guy. And it was kind of just a little too generic for me. Like, I had a really hard time just, like, buying into it and wanting to be more, like, immersed in that. I was just like, yeah, it just kind of looks like some comic book or whatever. I don't know.
Interesting. I love the iconography of the base and like, that cutaway view when you're doing all the sort of base management stuff.
Ant Hill.
Yeah, I love it.
Thing, yeah. Or the ant farm.
I bought it. It's on my Steam account, just sitting there along with 50 other games. And I'm, like, waiting for free time, you know, to get down in this. And I don't know when that's ever going to happen.
You should go back and hit it. It's good.
I know. I should.
Name all your squaddies after your friends. That adds a layer.
It is. We've had an ongoing discussion about who's alive and who's dead. Jeff Cannata's still alive. Sadly.
Yeah.
Sadly, Jeff Mattis was one of my first casualties, which everyone was like thinking was like intentional because he told me I had died twice in his. But it's just that I can't keep a support guy alive. I have a little trouble keeping support people alive.
It happens.
I might jump into it over the break. Where I'm gonna, we're kind of wrapping up on Skulls finally, and I'm gonna go down to Texas and spend a couple weeks with my brother and his family. And I don't think there's much to do where he lives, so I'm gonna bring my laptop and hopefully XCOM will be that game and I can sort of crack into once the kids go to bed. I'm pretty excited about that.
So what's gonna make Skulls a game that you're gonna play on the can?
Skulls is
that's the important question now.
Basically, I mean, when I sat down and I started this thing, I looked at my favorite strategy games of all time. I mean, like Warhammer 40,000 for sure. Obviously, Advance Wars is probably the biggest influence. And then the other one was Shining Force on Genesis. The
Holy crap.
Yeah. Love those games. And so I just kind of did a big mental checklist of everything I liked about those games and everything I didn't like. And like what, there's a lot of common stuff that bothered me. And how can we start solving, designing around some of these issues? So, it's fast-paced. It's quick. It's... it's immediate. It moves at a really quick clip. Like in Advance Wars, there's a couple things that bothered me. Like if you have really big armies, moving all 35 of your dudes takes a while. And you get like those grids, like those kind of gridlocked traffic where you've got like a narrow corridor and you've got to move your whole army through it. And like a bunch of slow dudes are up front and you just can't.
You're screwed.
You can't get them out of the way. And so you're just stuck in this traffic jam. And I was like, God, I hate that. Like how can we get around that? So I did a bunch of stuff to, all of us did. I spent a lot of effort on... Let's design around some of these common issues and make this game. Like, if you look at the spectrum of strategy games, like, you've got the hardcore Sims all the way up to, I would say, Advance Wars and Shining Force are both kind of, like, on the lighter, arcadey end of the spectrum. We wanted to go one step faster and smoother and just, like, much more action-inspired, I guess. I mean, it's not an action game at all, but you pick a dude, you move him over here, you hit that guy, you hit him, and, like, that's it. Like, it's just so fast. Like, when I play Advance Wars... Now, I'll turn off all the animations and stuff. I turn everything all the way up, and I'm just like, moving as fast as I can.
Do you still play Advance Wars?
Yeah.
Rad.
And I generally play the smaller maps. I generally like the smaller maps where there's, less guys, and it's just a much more immediate, just like boom, 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 boom. It's almost like, I almost consider it like a fighting game in slow motion. It's like parry, push here, okay, no, pull back, cover this spot, push here, oh, that didn't work, shit, I need to reinforce that spot now. But it's these quick decisions... But made at a pace where, like, an RTS is just kind of, like, chaos, right? Like, it's just in your face all the time, and you've got to be freaking out about everything. So this way, you've actually got time to, be a little bit more deliberate about it.
Do you play board games?
No, I don't have the patience for it.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, but that's interesting, because I feel like there's plenty of fast-paced ones. In fact, what you were talking about a fighting game in slow motion, there's a game called Yomi that's a two-player, it literally is Street Fighter as a card game in slow motion. And it plays really fast. I think you would dig it. Anyway.
I'll check it out. Yeah. I mean, I've been a video since I was a little kid. In the 70s, my dad had a pizza parlor. And it would get really busy at night. And he would have to have my mom come in to help. And they wouldn't be able to get babysitter. So they would bring me in. And my dad would just go to the cash register and take a styrofoam cup, like a soda cup, and just fill it with quarters. Hmm. And there was a bunch of video games in back. He's like, here, just go over there and don't make any, just go away. And I was like, fuck, Asteroids, Centipede, Donkey Kong Jr., Pac-Man, Battlezone, Star Wars, like all those things. Like I've been a complete idiot since I was like six. Like I'm just hopelessly enamored with this stuff.
And you had a panacea of vector-based graphics back there.
Oh my God, there was a lot of good stuff.
Seriously.
Yeah, Tempest was another big one. Played a lot of Tempest.
Oh, I love Tempest.
Tempest, Asteroids, Battlezone, and Star Wars were all like huge. Yeah.
So we've all played Skulls of the Shogun at one point in time over the
I
the
played
last
it this morning.
Couple of years.
Oh yeah, Jess played it most recently.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Oh, I really enjoyed it actually. I mean, well, I think I told you guys like when I played it a couple of years ago initially at IndieCade that the thing that one of the things I like about it the most, other than the art style, which is phenomenal, is you completely eliminated the tile based movement, and it's like these radiuses of so you can very easily look and see how far your character can move, where he can attack, like how, and it's all very, very fluid, and you don't ever feel like you're, you know, locked into these right angles and stuff, and therefore the terrain seems to play more of a valid role in your tactical stuff. It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I still play it, and you know, I'm still enjoying it. Like I play it against somebody, or I'll just like I took the Surface tablet home the other night, and I was just sitting on my couch playing on the Surface, and I was like, this game is fun, man. Like I still never get tired of it.
No, it was good, and like I said, I've noticed little improvements since I last saw it, but yeah, I'm ready for it to come out.
So you should describe the game, because I realize that we kind of like are doing this weird deal like where we're flirting with talking about the game but not talking about it, which is just stupid. So you should describe Skulls of the Shogun, and then I want to know what the hell like you've been tweaking and fiddling with over the last 2 years, because I thought like the last time I saw it, which was at Robot like a year ago, I was like, damn, the game's like, it plays really well. Like,
yeah,
I was having a good time.
I played it at PAX like 2 years ago, I think. And at that point, I was like, this game's awesome. Let's put it out.
So we, you know, I'll start with what it is. So it's a, you know, imagine Advance Wars. Strip out the grid. Strip out the menus. Strip out any sort of right angle clunkiness. And just, you know, speed that up in this really liquid, sort of fast-paced arcade. Like we keep coming back to this arcade-like concept of what's a fighting game feel like? Like how fast does that stuff move? Like the flashy menus, and it's fun. It's like boom, get in there, fight. You know,
right?
It's very much about just like you can only move five guys at a turn. It's set in the Samurai Afterlife. You play as General Akimoto, who's this great samurai general who gets betrayed on the battlefield on the eve of his like greatest victory when he would have become shogun of all Japan. He gets betrayed, ends up in the afterlife, and turns out somebody screwed him over in the afterlife too. So, of course, same guy screwed him over twice in life and in death, and he's like, he goes bonkers. And
fool
like,
me once.
Yeah. He breaks into the, he goes about breaking into the afterlife to regain his honor. So he gains all these goofy characters throughout the game. So it was actually a really good story. Like we wrote it, Ben, one of the lead engineers, wrote a bunch of story, and then our friend Mark McDonald actually wrote a large chunk of the text.
I didn't know Mark wrote for that.
Yeah, that's really cool. Really funny. Like it's really like everybody that plays it just laughs. I mean, there's some really stupid jokes.
Yeah, I was chuckling. When I was playing the demo, it is, and surprisingly so, because for the genre, you wouldn't expect something to be sharply written like that. But it's really good.
It's kind of funny how that came about too. Like the original concept was it was going to be a lot more serious, and we just kind of threw in this dummy dialogue with just stupid jokes and just like really dumb stuff. And then we started playtesting with friends and showing it to people and stuff. And everyone's like, God, I like the humor. And we're like, really? This is just like total throwaway crap. We're going to make it like, you know, a little bit more epic, and a little bit more serious. And everyone's like, no. Go stupid. And we're like, okay, we can go do that. Yeah, I can do that.
Go stupid.
Mark's got some really stupid stuff in there, I got to say. It's the good stupid.
He's going to be so flattered listening to this. Mark's going to be like, oh, thanks.
Well, it's interesting because the art style is so it can be serious, but it could also be silly. You know, it walks that weird line of like so stylized that it works in both.
It's very campy. And, you know, I wanted it to look like something. I mean, it's a strategy game. And yes, strategy games are a hard sell. We had a hard time getting a publisher for a long time because people are like strategy games, it's kind of a tough market. And I was like, well, what if it didn't look like that traditional strategy game? What if it didn't look like Orcs versus Elves or like, 1778 Revolutionary War battle stuff, but like bright, campy characters, really fast-paced action, kind of just goofy stuff. And it worked really well with this kind of the funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, the gameplay is really just you can only move five guys at a turn. One of the things that drove me nuts about those other games traditionally, like in Advance Wars, there's a couple games where I would like it'd be a big map, and you would get about half the map, and you would have about half the resources, and the other guy would have about half the map and about half the resources, and it just becomes a hamburger grind. Like, if you don't get that upper hand, you never win. And it just, once you do start to get that upper hand, like, it's kind of like this inevitable sort of tidal wave, and, like, it's just a long losing battle if you're on the wrong end of it. And so we really wanted to make that not happen, too, where you could, like, be winning, but all you got to do is kill the enemy general. Like, no matter how big his army is, if you can sneak in there, and, like, you can knock guys back. There's actually physics in it. So if you actually knock a guy back, like, he can knock him off a ledge for an instant kill, like, Virtua Fighter style. So all you got to do is, like, have him leave one opening. And one moment, you're like, wait a minute. If I move him over here, remember that? Oh, my God, I can go for the kill. So you get this really, like, heart racing sort of experiences. And it's always great at PAX. We'll have people come in and they'll be playing three or four people. And it's a strategy game, but they will be screaming and yelling. And like the one guy will win, he'll like jump up in the air, throw the controller down. It's like, in your face! It's like a football game or something. It's like that same intensity.
It's awesome.
But it's a strategy game. And I'm like, this is awesome. It's great multiplayer. It's so much fun.
I think the thing that sets it apart as far as these games is that you guys broke the grid and movement layout and rearranged it to I'm going to base it off of how far does their sphere extend for each guy. Mm. So how hard was it to work around that? Because that does that. I mean,
dude, it was a Pandora's box. It was like, I got all these great ideas of how this is going to be better. And then we're like, wait, this breaks everything.
Because like, it seems like in a turn-based game, a lot of the tactical balance is predicated on knowing the grid spacing, right? Because that's where they do the rock, paper, scissors.
That's that black and white, just kind of like rigidness that I wanted to get around. I wanted to be much more sort of from the hip, like, yes, I can move three squares, and I know he can only move two squares next turn, so I know that if I attack from here and just park here, I'm going to be safe, and I can just kind of dance around him. Like,
but that's part of the comfort level that people like, I think.
It is, and this is not that game. This is definitely not that game. This game is much more, I mean, it's meant to feel as arcade-like as possible, where you're like sort of making decisions like, I'm going to try this. And it's literally that fast. You're like, I'm going to try this and put down and see what happens. And it's much more gray. And it's much more kind of from the hip sort of shooting as opposed to like, okay, 17 and he's got 25 and I'm going to park right outside this thing and I'm going
to
move these guys.
Yeah, let's go back to the Advance Wars analogy. Was you learned exactly how many spots to move your artillery up behind your tanks and how far to bring them up behind the soldiers so that you had everybody laid out in the right fire pattern. So when you advanced, you had like the right overlapping layers of fire, right?
Yeah.
Do you find that leads to a much more improvisational gameplay experience?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Rather than tactic strategy.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, for multiplayer, as I showed you today, it really changes the flow of the game if you turn on a time limit. So it goes from being a turn-based strategy game, but if you give people like 30 seconds to move their five guys and come up with a plan, which is constantly...
You added that then.
Yeah, that's...
Because you remember like at PAX a year or two ago, John Davison and I played this game, and Jake's like telling us, he's like, oh, it's going to go really fast. And John and I are like sitting there playing, we're playing. We're like beating the hell out of each other. We're playing. I'm like, now it's like 30 minutes gone by. I'm like, it's not actually going that fast.
And that, I should have been more careful. I don't know. I think somebody else chose the map for you guys. It was a pretty big map.
It was a big map.
It was not good.
It was definitely
for
a big map.
PAX, we try to keep people on the really kind of arcadey, really tiny maps.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the time limit does
but it was still
make
funny.
A huge difference. Yeah.
It was still funny because it was like, yeah, we're like still like attritioning it.
Yeah.
Of course, that's probably how John and I both think. We're like old guys. We're like, oh, we'll just... hole up and beat the crap out of this guy.
Steven Totillo at PAX East a couple years ago, I guess it was 2 years ago, he sat down and played it and beat a mission without losing a single guy. And it took him like an hour. It wasn't even a big map, but he was so methodical. And I had never even seen that. Like, I'm very aggressive. I'm like, get in there, fight, you know,
some
bring
eggs,
these dudes up.
Online.
Like, yeah, like, let's get in there. Let's be messy. Let's try to overpower this thing. He was so methodical, but he had a great time too. And I was like, wow, that's a totally valid tactic. Okay. I mean, that's, if you want to play that way, you can play that way. And we have in-game achievements for like finishing levels without losing a single guy, because you could do it. It's just going to be very different experience than kind of what we designed for.
What the heck? I know one of the things Jeff was telling me is you've like added platforms. What are you coming out on now?
Xbox Live Arcade.
Okay.
Windows Phone. Windows Surface, which is the Windows RT, which is different than the full-blown...
The smaller tablet, the lighter tablet.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for making that confusing, Microsoft.
Yeah, Windows RT versus Windows 8. Or Windows 8 RT. I can't even... Yeah, I don't know.
Anyway.
So it's four platforms. There are four separate versions.
What's the fourth one? Oh, also Windows 8.
Yeah.
What are you in, Windows 7?
Not now.
So it's got to be like you're in like the store or whatever.
Yeah, we'll be on the Windows 8 store. And, you know, one of the big pushes for them is the idea that this is the first Microsoft game where you can play asynchronous online stuff against all four platforms.
So that's
cool. I see. You could be at home on your phone. You could be on your Surface. I could be on Windows 8. You could be on Xbox. And we could all be playing either, you know, not all of them support real time. Only the Xbox supports real time. And Windows 8, I believe. But... yeah, asynchronous gameplay where you can just be, you know, whatever. We got cloud saving too, so you'd be, you know, on the bus, you can be playing on the phone, and you get halfway through the campaign, and you come home, turn on the Xbox, and pick up right where you left off. It's, you know, the single player is probably 10 hours-ish of campaign mode. There's 20 levels, and there's about 30 levels of multiplayer. We've got all the way from the little Blitz maps, which are the really fast-paced arcadey stuff, all the way up to, you know, full-blown four-player.
Do you prefer it on a touch device, or do you like with the controller?
traditionally, I'm much more of a console slash... I mean, even on my PC, I play with an Xbox pad. That's just kind of... I'm a very arcadey sort of gamer. But I will say that this works really well because it's not an action game. It's a touch, and it just... You know, it took a long time. That was one of the things we were doing. Like, you know, when you guys saw it earlier on, I mean, that wasn't the whole game. We were showing you the maps that were done and the stuff that was the most presentable. That's what we were showing at PAX and stuff. But over the last year, you know, a year and a half or so, we've really spent a lot of time redoing the entire control scheme to be designed, you know, with touch. I mean, you can play with mouse and keyboard. You can play with touch. You can play with buttons. You know, kind of, and they all work really well. I mean, we were just lucky that the game happened to really sort of support all that stuff. Like, it could have been a lot worse.
Plus, finaling a game, it turns out, is really hard.
Turns out the last 10% is just like exponentially more work somehow. Really, I mean, we were supposed to hit the October 26th Windows 8 launch date, and you know, the RT stuff was just slow coming together, and everything just, you know, just packs up. And we're a tiny studio, right? We have two engineers. We're doing four versions of the game. You know, we've been doing our own ports. So it's been a haul. It's been a big challenge, but you know, we're finally at the end of the tunnel.
Home
so.
Stretch.
Congrats.
Feels good, man.
When's it out?
Well, we should be finding out our final street ship date, like unbreakable, sort of like absolute, very soon, like next week or so.
Sweet.
So we'll be making an announcement when we have our hard date.
All right.
Cool.
Awesome.
We have one more segment here to go on the show. We still have Bungie's Destiny stuff to talk about, and I don't know what else we're going to talk about. I'll let you guys talk about it during the break. We'll come back and hit all that, and then have the week 13 football time.
Football time.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Bacon pancakes, making bacon pancakes. Take some bacon and I'll put it in a pancake. Bacon pancakes, that's what it's gonna make. Bacon pancake. Bacon pancakes, making bacon pancakes. Take some bacon and I'll put it in a pancake. Bacon pancakes, that's what it's gonna make. Bacon pancakes. Bacon pancakes, making bacon pancakes. Take some bacon and I'll put it in a pancake. Bacon pancakes, that's what it's gonna make. Bacon pancakes.
With syrup. That's just joyous.
Yeah.
Jake is one of the greatest creatures ever bestowed
indeed.
Upon us.
Indeed.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Bacon pancakes.
Come on, Garnet. Turn that frown upside down.
What have you done? What have you wrought? What have you wrought, Jeff Cannata?
Take some bacon and put it in the pancake.
Feel free to send us your best bacon pancake.
Ooh, indeed.
Yeah.
No.
So, did you see that art for Destiny?
I haven't, but I hear you guys are all going gaga over it.
I kind of freaked out, yeah.
So, as we only have known the name prior to this, Bungie's multi-game deal with Activision is for a game called Destiny, which sounds very ominous.
I hope the sequel is called Destiny's Child. And then you're just constantly chasing waterfalls through the whole game.
You don't really go chasing waterfalls.
Dude, just stick to the rivers and the lakes you're used to.
All right, I guess that's good advice, guys. Thanks.
Anyway. Yeah,
it's about time. It's about damn time. That's all I got to say. What the hell you guys been working on for so long? Shut up. Show us some stuff. Okay,
For forever, because, by the way, in one of the greatest, like, leave a little Easter eggs ever, they left a poster for Destiny Awaits in ODST. Mm. Yeah, like you should, like someone found it's like the shot. It's like perfect. Like in ODST, there's a Destiny Awaits poster on a wall inside a building. Like, wow.
That's awesome.
That is pretty freaking rad Easter egg. So this the shots came about with a leak that hit Kotaku and IGN. There's some rumors floating out there. One of them is that a USB key was found left behind in a coffee shop. Who knows? The stuff that's out there is apparently from a marketing deck. So it has a lot of creative art, not necessarily done. I don't think any of it has been done specifically by Bungie, but it's stuff that was been done commissioned for the game or around the game.
I know the style of one of the guys, Jamie Jones. He's one of their lead concept artists, and I saw some of his stuff. Some of the better looking stuff was definitely his painting. Like, I know his style.
And then there's the one piece that Bungie was like, well, fine. Yes, that is... We're not going to say that's all accurate, but yeah, we're working on that thing, and that's sort of like that. And then they showed this one teaser picture, which is like this crazy, cool looking,
dude, so awesome,
like tank with a couple
it's
of guys,
spider tank.
It looks really cool.
Knight dudes in the snow, and they're like knights, but they're like guns, and oh my god, the capes are flowing. Really,
that sounds rad.
Destiny looks pretty rad. And here is so if you they did not deny the authenticity of this, so that's probably a cue that it's at least on point for some of it. The marketing deck had this to say about the concept behind the game. It says it's set on a future Earth with humanity on the ropes. So basically the quote was, our story begins 700 years ago. Or, sorry, our story begins 700 years from now in the last city on Earth, in a solar system littered with the ruins of man's golden age. A massive, mysterious alien ship hangs overhead like a second moon. No one knows where it came from or what it's here for, but only that it's our protector. Meanwhile, strange...
Kind of like our Halo, is what you're saying. A little bit.
But it's not a Halo. See, it's a ball this time. Very different.
Sorry. Totally different. I don't know what I was thinking.
Meanwhile, strange alien monsters creep in from the edge of the universe, determined to take Earth in the last city. We are young knights, tasked with defending the remains of humanity, discovering the source of these monsters, and eventually overcoming it.
I'm glad they decided to do that aliens versus humans thing.
Yeah,
that hardly ever gets
fresh. Yeah. It's definitely a fresh angle.
Yeah.
That sounds so, young knights.
All hating aside, like, I am so stoked for this. It looks awesome. I am so excited for
Give me a cape in any game, and I'm excited. So
a funny little tidbit here about the, you know, the leakage of this. So, you know, I was a concept artist for years at EA down here, down the street in Los Angeles here. And I was right next to the Tiberium team. If you guys remember Tiberium,
sure.
It was Command and Conquer action shooting game. So there was this really famous concept art piece. I think it was done by my friend Ken, but he's like the guy pointing with two fingers, like at the battlefield, was like leading the battle. I think it was on the cover of Game Informer when they did that big splash about the game. So I'm looking at the Destiny concept art just the other day, and I'm like, this guy is this pose, and he's like pointing with the two fingers, and I'm like, I've seen that before somewhere. Like, I know I have. I'm like, wait, I bet you $10 that is the guy from Tiberium. So we look it up, we bring up the concept art, and we're like looking at it, and we're like, yeah, this guy, whoever painted this art, literally grabbed that art and just kind of painted over it a little bit. But the arm, like from here on, is like the exact same thing. And so what this leads me to believe is when you're a concept artist, there's two kinds of concept art. There's the beautiful, juicy pitch paintings that are like, you know, kind of your flagship concept art that you show to, you know, the publishers or to whoever, the magazines, like all that kind of stuff. And those are kind of like your juiciest, like really like your top guy stuff. And then you have a lot of much more sort of in-house functional stuff where it's not about being really pretty. It's about like, this is my idea. You need to
understand it. How does it look?
Yeah. It looks like this.
Yeah,
basically,
yeah.
It looks like this. You know, and you just kind of whip shit together. You take photographs, you rip stuff off, whatever. But that stuff is not generally ever shown to the outside. So
it's working stuff.
Yeah. So the fact that that was included in this deck makes me believe that it was not meant to be leaked.
Yeah. It's like, I don't even know if I'm supposed to talk about this kind of thing, but it's like what directors will do to pitch movies.
like do you have a director in
mind? Let's just say I knew a director.
Right, yeah.
They'll take like existing movie scenes or trailers and cut together what they want you to feel. This is feel of the movie, and it'll be like, it'll be like Harrison Ford coming around the corner in that movie, and, you know, whoever else coming around the corner and, you know, running down the hallway in that movie, and it's cobbled together from existing material to go, this is kind of what I'm shooting for. And I think it's because it's not so much plagiarism as it is functional, like repurposing.
Yeah.
You're like, I just want you to get the idea of what I'm kind of going for here. Which I think leads us to believe that it wasn't intentionally leaked. Yeah. That it literally was functional shit that they were using that got accidentally leaked.
I think there's a couple of really cool things that come out, though, from the concept here, from the story that catch me. Like, the idea of humanity having had a short-lived golden age where we sort of expanded out and we were like badasses and we think we're cool and then got our shit kicked in and we're back on the Earth like with one planet. That's kind of a cool idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The giant orb spaceship sphere hanging over the last city, I'll hold judgment on that. I mean, that does seem awfully pulled from the book, from the playbook of Halo, but the rest of the stuff, the rest of the stuff sounds really cool. The idea of the knights being the protectors and all that stuff, that sounds really cool. And the idea that you would also, it also has a bit of a, like a Star Wars flair to it of like, we have the knights, like Jedi knights, and we're going to send them out to try and, you know, like lash back out and save ourselves. There's some really cool stuff going
on
there.
It's very Bungie, but I mean, they have a rabid fan base that loves what they do. If they completely, you know, go off and make some, you know, Farmville MMO thing, I mean, they would disappoint their whole fan base.
Well, they apparently have
what they do.
Three projects running inside the studio at the same time right now, I understand. One of them, I guess, is Marathon. Mm-hmm. So they have like a small group working on that, but then they have like another project as well. It's like, holy crap.
You know what I was thinking about? This is apropos of nothing, but and maybe I'm the last person to have this dawn on them, but I was thinking about, we were talking about strategy games and the future strategy games and stuff, and I realized that, like, you know, I love Blizzard so much, and I love their products, and I love fantasizing about what's coming from them, and there isn't, other than this, you know, Titan idea that supposedly is something, it's the first time that we had, you know, there was always a Diablo to dream about or a new StarCraft to dream about, and now those things have both happened, and we sort of know what's coming next from there. Probably will be a Diablo expansion. There's going to be another WoW expansion, and there's going to be another StarCraft for the next however many years.
We got two more StarCraft.
It's two more StarCraft.
Yeah, but I was just thinking about that the other day. Where are we at on that? It's been a while.
I know it's supposed to be a yearly release, and it's been two. Yeah, but for the first time,
Blizzard
I'm like,
time is different. Okay, it's, I mean, obviously no,
that's for sure. But I like it's the first time. I'm like, I don't have anything even to dream about them doing. Like all their franchises are kind of up to date at this point. I'm kind of bummed that I don't have a Blizzard fantasy project to dream about. You know what I mean? I guess whatever Titan is that, but.
Well, at some point they have to unveil Titan just the same way Bungie had to unveil Destiny. I mean, they well, can't just got, sit yeah. down
unveiled
on that. Forum.
Someone got pissed off. I'm like, fuck these guys. Something's going on out there. Someone needs to do the same with Titan.
What do you think the odds are it's another MMO? And they're kind of like,
Well, everybody says it's an MMO.
Well, Titan is an MMO. Yeah. And we know
from
that.
What I understand it's more of a shootery kind of free-to-play kind of deal-y. I think that's 98% speculation, but that's sort of the rumors that I've heard lately.
They've done a good job of, I mean, they do a good job of not letting stuff leak out too bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that's the thing is they don't, and then people love to speculate. So like, oh yeah, well, clearly it's going to be free to play because free to play is popular now and they won't do another World of Warcraft. They're going to do something. It'll be shootery. Yeah. It'll be shootery. It'll be free to play. Obviously, there you go. That's why they called it Titan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it could all be BS, but, and I guess that's the only thing to get excited about for them, but I want a new Blizzard project to be.
Do you want a new Blizzard project, like a new IP?
Well, I guess they're working on Diablo expansion and the next StarCrafts.
So I would be
those things just don't tickle me in the same way that something.
And they are in a way a smaller scale representation of a faster burn to where Nintendo is of like we've talked about before. Yeah. Nintendo, where's the new IP?
Right.
Where's the new IP? Right.
But yeah, we'll all get excited when the next Zelda comes out. We'll all get excited when the next big Mario game comes out. But
too risky, you guys. New IP.
And when you don't have as many, you know, when you don't have as many things in the cupboard to go back to, when you're just, hey, we've got Warcraft and we've got StarCraft. Then
I'd love a Warcraft 4.
Yeah.
That'd okay.
Cool. Yeah.
Along with StarCraft at the same time, because I mean they're committed to StarCraft right now because they did the three-piece solution to StarCraft 2, which each of the races. I mean that has basically cast, you know, that future for the next several years.
Mm-hmm.
Several years, really. At the rate that they go, it's going to be several years.
I mean,
well, they haven't even shown the next one, have they? It's been 2 years and they haven't even.
No, they've
talked
a
lot about what the it's out units next, will be and all that stuff.
It's out in the spring, I think. It's out the spring of next year. Yeah,
I actually played it right after they first announced it at Bungie, and it was like they were like, "Oh yeah, this is, you know, it was one of those things where like don't and nothing's final. We're tuning everything. Like we got months and months of tuning
Wait,
to
at
do."
Bungie or Blizzard?
I'm sorry, Blizzard. So yeah, that was missed. No, 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 no. They weren't. No. But yeah. So it's. I mean. From what I saw, but this was like what, a year and a half ago? Like a year ago? It was a long time ago. It was like long enough ago that I'm like, oh yeah, that's not out yet. Why isn't it?
And they're still turning around with their Dota Heroes thing.
Right.
Blizzard Heroes.
Yeah.
Or whatever it is. I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see how that whole MOBA world evolves and whether it really is built to handle the influx of games that are coming there.
Yes.
You've got Guardians of Middle Earth coming on Xbox Live Arcade in 2 weeks or 1 week.
1 week.
It's coming in 1 week. You have one of them just flew out of my head. You got League of Legends, which is still super powerful. You've got Heroes of New Earth, which is still sort of floating around out there. Oh, you've got Dota 2, which Steam has been, you know, slowly juggernauting. That could be the one that just comes through and steamrolls everybody.
Dude, I know a lot of people that are big into that, man.
This was going to be my finishing move, but I guess I'll just talk about it now because, unfortunately, Guardians of Middle Earth is still under embargo, so I can't really talk about it, but I've been playing a lot of it. Alex and I are both getting into it, and the same kind of thing happened to me with Smite, where these sort of upstart MOBAs, I feel like I can actually play because the communities aren't as robust and intimidating to me. Mm-hmm. And I really, with as much as I am sort of understanding the playstyle of these games and appreciating them, have the ambition, as I think I've mentioned this before, but I have the ambition to get into either League of Legends or Dota. And I don't,
so beautiful.
I don't know which one of them to do. I don't know which one of those is more accessible for me, who's sort of just learning this new game style.
I don't think either of them are particularly
accessible, but think about this in Dota 2. Dota 2 has been, you know, a lot of the effort that Steam and Valve have put into it, Steam is their platform. A lot of effort Valve's put into it has been developing this idea of rewarding community members who assist players and help you get to learn the ropes. I mean, that's they have definitely been wanting to tackle that head on. So I think that there's a good reason to say maybe Dota is a good place to go. Although League of Legends ultimately beat down Heroes of New Earth for being more approachable. Mm-hmm. I mean, keep in mind, Han was like basically a Dota 1-to-1, whereas League of Legends allegedly simplified some things and made it more approachable.
Well, I literally am installing League of Legends right now. I started downloading it before I left. And I don't want it to be a second job. Like, I'm not looking for that. I want to be able to jump in, have fun, and jump out. And maybe...
I'm going to send you a video you need to watch then. Because there are some excellent YouTube starter videos for League of Legends that I think will dramatically improve your enjoyment of the game. Because they will... Like, they're 20 to 25 minutes long, but if you watch, there's one of them for sure that you should watch, and if you watch it, you'll have a much better grasp of what it's about to play the game, how to play the game, and also how to then to go in and learn how to play the game in the real world.
Yeah, because I'm wondering if really what I'm better suited for is Guardians of Middle-earth or these other games that are less the sort of marquee MOBAs and are a little bit more... welcoming.
Are you saying because they have a smaller population base that they won't be?
And less hardcore population, you know?
And it's coming out on XBLA?
Yeah.
Who's the publisher?
I should know that. It is...
Guardians of Middle-earth?
Yeah.
It's got to be WB.
It is WB. Yes, it is WB.
Do you know who developed it? Was that done...
I'm going to say it wrong. Nope. Do you know Garnet?
No, I did know. I should know. I feel like it's someone I should know. It's someone I'm going to go like, oh yeah, of course they did that. Yeah.
Is it one of the Seattle ones, like the ex-Surreal guys or Monolith? Or
we're going to look it up while we continue to talk about
anyway,
it.
Anyway, it's under embargo, so I can't really talk about it yet anyway. But I think it's really squarely aimed at, like, having the IP, the Lord of the Rings IP, is squarely aimed at people who are like, hey, you've never played a MOBA before, but here's characters you recognize and come over here and check out this new kind of game. I don't think it's going to skim much off the top of the people who are really serious about MOBAs, but it's like built for a controller. You know, it's $15 on XBLA. It's super accessible that way. And I think that it maybe will be, you know, my first MOBA, and for me, it's not my first, but it's close to my first. And it, you know,
Fisher Price is my first MOBA.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I don't mean that to be a pejorative. It sounds like it is, but I think that's kind of the market they're looking at. It's like, hey,
it makes sense. I mean, I look at those games and I don't play them and I'm super intimidated by it. I watch one of my guys plays Dota every night and I'm like, God, that looks crazy. Like, how do you learn? He's like, you just suck for a long time.
And anybody who plays it will basically tell you the same thing. They'll be like, I suck for a long time. And then you get, then you can play it. But I don't play golf.
You know, it's like, I would love to play golf, but I'm so tired of sucking at it. It's like, oh no, it's going to suck forever. It's like,
to answer your question, Jake, Guardians of Middle Earth is Monolith. So Kirkland. So yeah, up there in the circle, but it makes sense, right? Because there's obviously a lot of folks around there who they can like talk to about like, oh, how'd you do this? How'd you do this? How'd you do that? I'm be most curious to see how it responds to a controller.
Yeah, they put a lot of time and energy into that, and
So on that subject, though, about going back to the cupboard and needing to get refreshes of your IP, some people have been talking to us about our response to Wii U. And in fact, VideoStar started up a thread about what your favorite console of all time is. And it was interesting because he started it off with a rather unsuspected answer, and then a number of people chimed in and agreed. His answer was GameCube. And his answer...
Really?
That you look like you just smelled some bad cheese.
You know, I'm a lifelong Nintendo hardcore fan. I worked at Nintendo as a game counselor in high school. I played all the NES games known to man for like 3 years. Like, you know, it's been a huge part of my DNA. But to me, the GameCube just was kind of a flop. Like, I don't remember any his awesome argument, experiences I had on GameCube.
His argument for GameCube,
except for Zelda, maybe,
was that
Wind Waker's great.
And he was Metroid in the Prime, spot.
Beautiful Joe. Sorry, go ahead.
See? And he was in the spot where he wanted to feel nostalgic, and it, like, hit the nostalgia buttons just right for him.
The big old green button?
Stood in line for it, and then right off the bat, you had Rogue Squadron, and then a number of great games after that, and he rattled off some of the ones you just rattled off.
I don't think you can... I mean, if you're saying your favorite console of all time, then you can justify however you want.
Sure.
But I think if you're talking about sort of objectively the greatest console of all time, it's hard to argue against the Super Nintendo.
I was going to say.
It's hard to argue. It's also really hard to argue against the PlayStation and PlayStation 2.
Yeah, PlayStation. But I think SNES. Like,
when you look at the highlights of the SNES stuff, I mean, I was going to say the Super Famicom because I was really big into the import stuff back then, too. But, I mean, just the action games and all the RPGs. I mean, Square was just, like, killing it back then. They were at the top of their game. Like, everything they put out was amazing. And amazing action games. I mean, you know,
PlayStation.
Yeah,
we could go toe-to-toe on this with PlayStation, for sure. I'm pretty sure we could
for me, it's totally one-sided. I mean, the PlayStation was great. It was fantastic. There's a lot of cool stuff, too. But I think it's much more
fun to talk about it in terms of, like, your personal favorites anyway. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people did jump in and agree with him on GameCube. Chaz Nova XZ was in there. Ridley Saria felt the love was there. But he did go back to Super Nintendo. It was like Super Nintendo was the bomb.
Super Metroid, Super Zelda, Super Mario, man. That shit was boom, boom, boom.
Z Mansfeld and Runner Matt were also, like, a number of people came out like, oh, yeah, GameCube. Big GameCube support. So, I don't know. Like, you guys,
have fond feelings.
What's your emotional favorite console?
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy.
Does PC count?
Does PC count?
Yeah, of course it counts.
My 486.
My first Pentium.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah. Yeah, first time I built a P90.
PC would be my if that counts, then yes.
Mine's a Super Famicom. It's the most beautiful console ever made, I think. The font was amazing, the controller was amazing, you know, the colors. I mean, like, you look at the 17-bit logo, it's obviously inspired by Famicom.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is the core. It was the highlight of video gaming, and everything I do, like, I think back to that era and how those games felt and how they looked. I mean, I'm still a 2D purist. I prefer 2D gaming to 3D just because everything's so immediate. It's perfect. You can judge distances and stuff without any ambiguity. You know, that's just kind of my...
And when Street Fighter II Turbo was released on the Super Nintendo...
Dude, I imported it from Japan. I would bring it to parties. Like, I was, like, in college at the time, and I would, like, go to house parties, and I would just bring my Super Famicom with Zelda or with you know, Street Fighter II Turbo, and I would just plug it into some dude's house. I didn't even know it was TV. I'm like, hey, who wants to play me? You know, like, I was so addicted to that.
I remember thinking, that's it. I don't
need
video
more.
Games are done. Yeah. I don't need anything else than Street Fighter II Turbo on the Super NES.
Do you remember before Turbo came out, like, you could play with the Game Genie and play the regular Street Fighter II, and you could kind of get some of the weird stuff?
Yeah.
Like, you could get them to go up in the air higher.
Yeah, you could, like, stand in the midair and throw a fireball.
Play fireballs, yeah. And then it came out one day, and I was just like, oh my God, God is good. Blue Ken will destroy anybody.
Rad. Jeff Mattis?
I'm definitely a PC guy, and that's primarily because that's what I grew up with. I mean, like, my earliest memories of gaming are, like, you know, Infocom stuff and, like, Sarah Online Adventure stuff. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I mean, I remember Compute Magazine back in the day?
I had Computer Gaming World.
They used to do a thing where they'd have, like, in the middle of the magazine, they'd have, like, 10 pages of basic code.
Yeah.
And if you type it all in, it makes a little
My
game
sister would sit beside me and read it off to me,
dude,
and as I typed it. Did you do the same
my
thing?
My sister, too, yeah.
We have awesome sisters.
Yeah, we do.
Are we brothers?
I don't know. We're both named Jeff.
Oh, shit.
Oh, no. So, yeah, that's PC, definitely. I mean, and it's one of the... You know, it's the trailblazer, right? It's for everything. It's
like, I was working at Enix back before Enix merged up with Square. I was a game counselor there, and my buddy somehow got a copy of Doom before it shipped. Mm-hmm. I don't remember, like, I had never heard of it. I didn't know anything about it. It didn't have any sound in the build we had, but I sat down and I plugged it in my 386 or whatever it was that I had back then, and, you know, just. It was like this illuminating moment of just like, this is the future of video gaming. This was.
I'm embarrassed to think how many hours I put into Wolfenstein 3D.
Oh, yeah. Like, I was reviewing games back then. I was reviewing computer games. Yeah, I mean, that was my first job at 14 years old. I was reviewing computer games when people don't even realize. Like, people are like, oh, I was such a nerd when I was a kid. No, you didn't have your fucking picture in the newspaper saying, please beat me up, kids, because I'm reviewing computer games in the newspaper. Like, video games were not cool back then. And it was all PC stuff that I was reviewing, too. I mean, I was fucking Tongue of the Fat Man and, you know, do you remember those games?
Oh, yeah.
Crime Wave. You know? The thing that would always drive me crazy, because I was such a PC purist, is that there was never – we were always trying to find a platformer that could compare to platformers. Yep. And then Commander Keen came out.
Right.
From id Software. It was shareware. And it was the first game that was like, oh, my God, we can do a platformer on a PC and it won't be terrible. We still had to play with the fucking arrow keys and the space bar. But it was the first platformer. I mean, this is like nostalgia.
Well, it wasn't that long after that. Duke Nukem, the original.
Minor 2049,
like the
2D one.
Which one?
Minor 2049er, yeah.
That was one of the first platformy sort of PC games I played the hell out of.
Yeah.
I also really enjoyed the original Castle Wolfenstein on my friend's Apple IIe. Yes.
Oh, man.
And that was like, that was crazy because we would spend hours on that, and it had, I mean, it was probably one of the shittiest controlling games in retrospect now, because you're like aiming the gun separately from your body. It's just like your gun's like rotating around your wrist, like pointing in different, it's just like.
For me, the Apple IIe was all about Load Runner and.
Yeah,
Wizard of War, was that Apple IIe?
And Elite.
Wizard of War or Wizards of War?
Wizards of War. Yes. That was fucking awesome. That was the shit right there. Definitely.
Oh my God.
All right. I'm going to wrap this up. Oh, by the way, mine, not that anyone cared, was Dreamcast.
Oh, really? Dude, I feel like that's the sort of hipster answer. I feel like that's
hipster?
The like, yeah, because that it died way before its time, and
it did, oh no, I don't dude, give it. I don't, it had some fucking
the die before its time
dude.
Part. I don't give a shit about. It was
an amazing hardware.
I agree. Like from Grandia to Skies of Arcadia, Jet Set
Space
Radio,
Space Channel 5.
Oh yeah,
Space
Channel 5.
Rez, anyone?
Rez.
I have the soundtrack.
Crazy
Power Stones has a soundtrack to Rez. I mean,
I fucking bought Quake 3 Arena and 4 controllers on the Dreamcast to play with my friends, and we played a total of one time 4-player screens.
But I mean, that's the breadth of this
thing.
I
have 3 fucking GameCube Dreamcast controllers I will never use.
What about Power Stone? You didn't play multiplayer on that?
Awesome. I love Power Stone.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Totally freaking awesome.
That was, you know, I worked at Sega Japan at that time. I mean, it was right when the Dreamcast came out. So, like, to me, that's etched on my soul, too.
Oh, wow,
I mean, it was such an amazing time. And then watching that PlayStation 2 come in and, you know, everything kind of fell apart.
Sonic Adventure is the last good Sonic game that was ever made. I love Sonic Adventure.
And we wouldn't have had Shenmue either.
I played the shit out of both the first
C-Man,
one and the second one.
C-Man?
I
never played C-Man.
I never did either.
It's better to watch, but it was definitely very interesting, and it was an exciting time when there was a lot of weird stuff.
Or call your significant other to remind her to, like, hop onto your Dreamcast real quickly and talk to C-Man. Yeah, never mind.
Deal with my C-Man. Yeah.
All right, we're going to move to finishing moves so we can wrap this sucker up.
It's the weekend, and it's time for Finishing Moves.
All right, I think we'll start off with Jeff's Jeff Mattis.
Okay, my finishing move today is, what is my finishing move? Blade Slinger iOS. So it's like the next, you know, Unreal Engine, you know, really snazzy looking, kind of like Horn level graphics, you know, sort of thing. Anyway, it is a brawler shooter that uses a one-hand control scheme. So you can, you know, you move and you attack and you tap and you swipe and all that sort of stuff. And it's not like revolutionary or whatever. It doesn't really reinvent the Infinity Blade, you know, Marvel Avengers or initiative rather formula that they've made. But it is a pretty cool take on that sort of genre. It's like $5, I think. So if you want something shootery that looks, you know, shootery combat-y that looks good on your iPad, it's worth checking out.
Cool.
Sweet.
Jeff Cannata.
Well, it's fun that we were talking all nostalgia-y because my finishing move is about that. Downloaded and have been playing Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition. I think it's Baldur's Gate 2 Enhanced Edition.
It's Baldur's Gate Enhanced. No, it's not Baldur's Gate 2. It's Baldur's Gate Enhanced Edition.
I should know that having played it. Really impressed with the presentation.
Did you name your character Drizzt?
No. Drizzt. These games were so much a part of my life. I love them very much, and I'm really impressed with how they've managed to make them not feel dated. It obviously it's still sprites, and the, you know, it is dated, but it really is very playable. I think even people that, you know, never played these games could enjoy. It's such a deep, awesome, great storyline. The combat is super cool. It's like that old AD&D rule set that's in play. And if you've never played Baldur's Gate, this is a perfect time to check it out over the holidays. I think they're selling them for $15 now.
Cool.
I'm digging it.
You know what you could get for 99 cents?
Yeah,
you could get Rider Rumble. Rider Rumble.
Yeah. I almost said Word Fighter.
Yeah, well, we had to, you know, have to have a name you can actually
right.
get, as opposed to a name that might be taken by other
it's
things.
It's not Right or Rumble. It's no, a it's, Writer
it's
Rumble.
Rider Rumble. Right. It's your famous literary characters duking it out in a spelling. Look, this is the game that I've been, so I'm director of publishing for our mobile arm now, and this is our first game. The Feel Every Yummy guys have been working their asses off on it. Gian Cruz and Chris Zabala, they did a fucking fantastic job. I'm so excited for them. It was really awesome to help a small crew of a couple of guys, and you know, they outsourced some art and some music to get this game done, because we saw it like 2 years ago at PAX.
Yeah, we did.
And it's also just a super cool eye-opening experience of how far it takes to come from prototype and showing something to making it into a working game to finaling that goddamn thing and getting it done. And it's like exhilarating and exciting, and I don't know. I don't want to sell it. I think it's a cool game. We loved it, and I hope you'll take a look at it if you have an iDevice. And
it's actually, I mean, it's they really sponsored fun. Our episode. You helped publish it, so we're far from objective about this, but it is a really cool game.
I wouldn't have picked it. Like, the cool thing about what I have the opportunity to do, and the reason I'm excited about what I'm doing in the mobile publishing space, is that it's basically I'm getting to pick games that I think are cool and projects that have a lot of potential and help them get made. That's not a bad deal.
No.
It's really not a bad deal. So I hope you guys will try it out if you want to, and if you don't, well, then don't. I don't care. I mean, I do care.
No big whoop.
Yeah. No big whoop, man. No big whoop. It's all right. It's all good. You want a pizza? I don't know. I don't know where that came from. It's because I feel awkward talking about it. I really do feel awkward talking about
don't
it.
Don't have to. You've said your piece.
Yeah. Jake, you can finish her off.
My finishing move. Of course, everyone needs to buy Skulls of Shogun. It's an amazing project.
Amazing project.
What's that release date again?
Soon.
Jake, your game's really awesome. How awesome is your game?
Very awesome. Very soon it's coming, and you can play this very awesome game. My actual finishing move, though, is Bungie right now. Or not Bungie. Halo. Halo and Bungie, because right now Destiny is like my new most wanted thing in the horizon besides Far Cry 3, which is right. Very soon.
That's coming.
That's even sooner than Skulls of Shogun, but not by much. I've been playing a lot of Halo 4, and I gotta say, I'm super impressed. I'm a big old school Halo fan, and I was pretty dubious that...
Dude, I was too.
I was like, I don't know, new guys, you know, blah, blah, blah. They kind of fucking nailed it. I mean, it's kind of amazing. And as an art director and just as a concept artist, I got to say, those are the best looking rocks I have ever seen in any video game. Like, I was playing, I was just like, these rocks are crazy. Look at how awesome they are. Like, how did they do this? I was freaking out. But the combat's tight. Story's fun. Visuals are beautiful. Like, they're doing stuff that I've just never seen before in 360. And hats off to 343.
All right, hats off to everybody here. If you're not sticking around for the football talk after the end, thanks for joining us. Of course, big thanks to my friend Jake. Thanks, dude.
Thanks for having me, dude. It's been good.
What's the best way to keep up with Skulls and 17-Bit and all that kind of stuff?
We're going to be relaunching our webpage very soon. You can follow us at 17_bit on Twitter, and I go by Jkooza, J-K-O-O-Z-A on Twitter.
There you go, and keep it up. I'm sure we'll be covering on Shack News as well. Jeff yes. Mattis, you know where to get him.
Yeah, I'm at Jeff Mattis on Twitter, and I'm on the Shack News, too.
And Jeff Cannata.
Yeah. Follow me on Twitter, Jeff Cannata with 2N1T.
You've got some cool projects in the works as well. He has some
we
things
hope.
He's working on.
We're hoping that there will be more.
All right. Thanks to the booth. Micah in there running the boards. Del Rio and Ryan, as always, backing us up as well. That's it. That's your Weekend Confirmed. If you're not sticking around till next week, we are Ghost. Work so hard that you know we play harder. Work so hard, don't you know we playing harder? Yeah, come on. It took a minute for me to see what
was going down. My body's vibrating, pulsating to the sound. Hey, bartender, hit me with another round. I gotta finish these rounds.
This episode of Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by Writer Rumble. Take on your friends in a game of speed spelling madness or battle against enemies in single player mode. Pick it up today in the App Store.
All right, we are moving into the latter stages of the year. There's not much time for me to catch up from my 15 and 20 seller.
Oh, man. Freaking Del Rio.
He's running away with it. He's at 22 and 13. He's at 22 and 13 now. Jeff, the engineering staff here at Atlantis Group Studios, and Andrea.
Yeah.
Damn! All of you right there in second place at 18 and 17. Guests staying in there strong at 17 and 18. And James and I just squandering it at 15 and 20. We don't even know what the hell we're doing. Last week, the Lions won on points. The Skins and the Patriots. This week, I have to... we were just talking about this break. I'm being completely transparent. I'm adding... The first game here is to get Dave a loss.
I endorse that decision.
It is Seattle at Chicago -4. So Seattle's getting 4 whole points going into New Soldier. Yeah. I'm taking Chicago. I'll take that to bet all day long.
Chicago is looking strong. As long as Jay Cutler plays, they can win.
Yeah. And by the way, you know, I know this, like, so, you know, Jay Cutler made me think of something. I'm so disappointed in my Cowboys. I realized finally that
they're terrible.
I finally jumped off the Tony Romo bandwagon, because I now kind of figured out that he kind of is Jake the Snake.
Really?
Remember him from the Cardinals?
Sure.
Because he's the guy who go out there and you never know when he's going to run around. Jake the Snake Plumber, though, for you guys who are like Arizona State fans, and he'll run around and sometimes he'll make some magic shit happen. But look, even the funny thing is, Plumber's arguably better because Plumber took his teams further than Romo ever has.
Do you think that Romo would be better on a different team?
No.
You don't? You really think he's just not that good?
I think that he's regressed so much in the last 2 years that I don't know where, like, he was starting to get.
See, I think he's on the Bears and they're a better team than with Cutler, but.
I don't think so. I think he's regressed too much. His problem now is that he continues to still have that inability to control his competitive nature and think and make a right move, as opposed to just like, I'm going to try and win this. He's still playing like he's in college at times. He's still playing like he's in college and can be enough better than the other folks on the playing field to do something magical. And while it's cool for him to be trying that hard most of the time, he's got to understand when the situation breaks down such that he doesn't make the stupid mistakes.
Well, the Cowboys may be able to get Alex Smith next year.
Like it's a joke. I'm stunned that they're playing Kaepernick. Freaking Alex Smith has done nothing other than
third-rated passer in the league.
An amazing record. And
talk about a guy that's been shit on his whole career.
Efficiently run that offense.
He's been shit on his whole career. And you see that? Do you see the craziness that
he should be the 49ers Trent Dilfer. He should be the guy who's in there, steady Eddie, running the system, making everything work, and taking him to a Super Bowl.
You see the craziness that Harbaugh is saying now? Like, where he was like, Kaepernick is our starter, and so is Alex Smith. They're like, what? What was that last bit? Oh, Alex Smith is also a starter. He's not starting. He's not starting against the Rams, but he is our starting quarterback. Well, then how does that work, sir? No more questions.
The other thing is, I'm appalled that someone that experienced in football
Who has been in that exact position
would let a quarterback controversy derail a season that is such a good season.
He's literally been in that exact position.
I know. I don't understand. And by the way, could someone throw the damn ball to Vernon Davis?
I know, right?
Could someone throw the damn ball to Vernon Davis?
We're winning. Thanks for our defense's scoring points, which is nice.
Anyway, I'm taking Chicago and I'm laying the points.
I'm taking Chicago.
Chicago ball. And laying the points.
Bears.
You're taking the Bears and in the booth. Seattle bitches.
Watch him pull ahead.
Seattle
again.
Bitches. And Micah, who are you with? Micah is also taking the Seattle bitches. All right, second game of the week. I'm throwing this one out there because I think it's pretty interesting.
Resurgent Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Do you have their picks? I have them someplace. We'll have James and Andrea's picks in the show notes or something. Second one I'm doing, resurgent Tampa Bay Bucks. Yeah, because they've been looking really good. Obviously, hell of a running attack. Although Denver has been allowing the fourth lowest amount of rushing in the league. So it's a good matchup there. And Denver at home is always tough. So it's Tampa Bay at Denver. Denver -7. Denver laying 7. It's a really tough one. I'm not going first.
I'll take Denver and I'll give the points. I think they're going to be the AFC representative in the Super Bowl this year. I'm totally buying into the Peyton Manning hype
the
train.
Peyton Manning show.
Yeah. And I think they can put up points and they're going to just outpace Tampa Bay at home at Mile High. They'll just going
to
be
hard to argue with that. Hard to argue with that.
It's hard to go beat Denver on their home court. And I don't think that 7-point spread's going to make a difference. So
it's December, but it's not really been a cold December yet. I wish I knew what the weather was going to be like, but because, you know, it's Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Notorious for not traveling well, right. Of course.
Into weather. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I, you know what, man, 7 points. I do see a potential for Tampa Bay to fall far behind in this. So I'm going to go with you guys and go with the Broncos and throw down those 7 points. What about you guys in the booth? Dave. Oh, well, so there you go. Mike,
are you a Bucks fan?
Oh, Mike, oh, never mind. Mike's a Bucks fan.
I didn't realize that. Lived in Tampa.
Shit, I didn't know. Well, there you go, dude. Yeah. He's bringing the love for the hometown Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Dave is not feeling quite so generous, so he's going with
on the Denver train.
Denver Broncos. And then finally, and in a very important matchup for my Cowboys, because sadly, depending on how these things turn, they could still be a contender. Kind of hilarious. Yeah. We've got the New York Giants going into new RFK to face the pretty hot Washington
Redskins. The Washington RG3s.
Yeah. And it's the, but the Redskins are getting 2.5. Taking on the Giants.
Giants looked unstoppable last week.
And they looked very stoppable the week before that.
That's crazy.
It is totally crazy.
This is going to be my surprise pick. I am going with the RG3s. And I think the Redskins are going to play well at home. And I think it's going to be a close game.
I think it's going to be a close game as well. And I think that if it goes to being a shootout, I sort of like the Redskins in this just on the strength of, like, it's really hard to argue RG3 right now. The dude is just...
It's hard to argue Eli Manning.
He's
right now,
in a zone.
It's like,
true, but I'm with Washington at home plus 2.5.
Yeah.
Washington.
I think this is about as close to a coin flip as we have this week. Giants.
So the Giants... And what about in the booth? Dave's got a soliloquy.
He's like,
apparently there's someone, little kid, coming and giving a speech to the Giants, so the Giants are going to come through strong and be dominant. So he's taking the Giants, and Micah is on the Giants as well. All right, there you go, folks. We have we're closing down on the end of the year. Not much time for me to come back.
Gotta make your move.
Gotta make my move. Yeah, gotta make my move now. Hope you all have a great week ahead, and we will see you next week.